Leaders providing fairly strong suggestions on what the current Labour leader should be doing, and certainly in Tony Blair's case, Keir Starmer appears to be receptive. I want you to think about this, because in your pocket right now, or certainly in your possession at the moment, there are loads of things that determine and define your identification. So why on earth wouldn't we go all in on a national digital ID card?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, an amber danger to life weather warning has just come into force across much of Scotland. Storm Floris is expected to bring very strong winds and heavy rain, with severe travel disruption expected. Some rail operators are advising passengers not to travel at all. Forecaster Joe Wheeler says gusts could reach 85 miles per hour.
Of course, it's the Edinburgh Fringe at the moment as well, so people giving out leaflets might find they get distributed rather faster than they thought. But also, of course, it's a time when we've got a lot of holiday makers. People really need to be prepared, because it won't be a day for going rambling.
A yellow warning is in place across a wider area of Northern England, North Wales and Northern Ireland. The Conservatives say the latest announcement on tackling English Channel migration is just tinkering at the edges. A further £100 million will support the pilot of the one-in, one-out returns deal with France. It'll also pay for hundreds more National Crime Agency officers. Shadow Treasury Minister James Wilde has told LBC it won't make a fundamental difference.
It's all very well putting more money into technology, doing a bit more with France, which could make a difference at the margin. But fundamentally, the numbers show that unless you've got a deterrent, which was in place, hadn't been put into proper effect, but it was there and ready, which the Labour government decided to stop, then you're not going to stop the people coming.
A 21-year-old man has been charged with the murder of a Saudi student in Cambridge. Mohammed Al-Ghassim, who was on a 10-week language placement, was stabbed on Friday night. Chas Corrigan is due to appear at Peterborough Magistrates Court today. Millions of drivers could receive hundreds of pounds each as part of a motor finance compensation scheme. The Financial Conduct Authority is to consult on a claims system following Friday's ruling in the Supreme Court. And the final test between England and India is on a knife edge, heading into the last day of the series. The hosts need 35 more runs to win at the Oval, with India requiring 4 wickets. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 90.88. That's up 20. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, very strong winds and heavy rain from the storm, turning drier with sunny spells. Moving in from the west later, a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search "Don't Get Caught Out".
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Very good morning to you. It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If I say ID cards, who thinks of Gordon Jackson? It's very much an age-based association there. And of course, it wasn't ID cards that did for him. It was the wily Gestapo officer who said good luck to him in English after he had passed himself off as a German quite perfectly, but whose guard temporarily slipped in one of the closing scenes of The Great Escape, and the Gestapo officer said, good luck, and Gordon Jackson's character said, thank you very much. He's Scottish, by the way. and he got caught as a consequence of that. And I only mention it because whenever I've turned my attention to ID cards in the past, digital ID cards, I've often found myself thinking of The Great Escape. Probably the first time as a kid that I became conscious of the practice of being asked to produce your papers on pain of punishment. Papers, please. Papers, please. I won't do a German accent. But papers, please, would be the instruction that you received. That's what we saw on The Great Escape. And I thought, oh, I don't want to be like that, because I don't want to be like the Nazis, which is a fairly good rule in life, isn't it? Be less Nazi. And yet, ID cards, I don't think, can be exclusively associated with that particular regime. Why are they in the news today? I will tell you. Keir Starmer is looking into the idea of what the Daily Mail describes as Blair-style ID cards. And they describe it as one way of fighting illegal immigration, which does seem to be exercising much of the chattering classes at the moment. The Prime Minister is said to have become convinced by the benefits. The Cabinet appears to be in agreement. Number 10 is now working on the idea, the Observer reported yesterday, which, by the way, has become a cracking read. It was a good read before, don't get me wrong, but it's a very different organ now, the Observer. I don't know if you've cast an eye over it. Power of newspapers is very, very much on the wane. But if you enjoy nice, sort of informative reads, the Observer's getting something right. And it was in that newspaper yesterday that the report of an imminent rollout, or a possible rollout, was reported, with the objections being, I love this phrase, practical rather than philosophical. So the current problems with introducing it would involve practicalities as opposed to philosophies. I want to talk about the philosophical element of it, and I want to do it as fully and frankly as possible. I genuinely want to know, early doors, why you have a problem with this idea. 0345 60 60 973. Here are some things you currently have. Probably, you probably have a national insurance number, right? You do have a national insurance number. You probably have an NHS number, right? You probably have your address, if you have bothered to insure, on the electoral register at the moment, so they know who you are, how you are, and where you are. That was quite pithy, wasn't it? Who you are, how you are, and where you are. What else have we got? You've probably got a passport, although were we conducting this conversation in the United States of America, that would be much less of a presumption. And of course, in socioeconomic and generational terms, you're less likely to have a passport if you are from a poorer background, or if you are younger. You might also have a driving license, which is, of course, another form of photo ID. So what have we got so far? We've got national insurance number, we've got NHS number, we've got electoral register, we've got driving license. Anything else on that list? Don't ring in with it. Just text it to 84850 or WhatsApp 0345 60 60 973. If you were to try to knit all of those things together, it would surely be a good thing. Also, genuinely illegal migration, people who are not here with valid asylum claims and valid refugee status. Unfortunately, we're living in a country at the moment where many deeply unpleasant people are desperately trying to conflate all of those issues, to the point where essentially anybody who might be considered a bit foreign-looking is adjudged to be a criminal, either in full flight or waiting to happen. I don't know, and I didn't know whether I was going to talk about it or not, actually, but I don't know if you saw some of the responses to Rishi Sunak at the weekend, simply posting Happy Yorkshire Day to people and reminding them on social media that Yorkshire is his home. You know when something hideous has happened, because for those of us who no longer go on Elon Musk's platform, some stories break out of it onto other places because of the sort of second-hand reporting of it. And some of the responses to that, I mean, at risk of giving them too much oxygen, people telling Rishi Sunak that he had no business claiming to be from Yorkshire or even from the United Kingdom, they do rather seem to be receiving more coverage and volume at the moment, don't they, those kind of views. And to make me feel very sorry for Rishi Sunak, I mean, to the point of feeling that you'd almost want to put an arm around the guy if he was seeing some of the bile that was being directed at him, political differences aside, is a mark of where we are. And it's important not to let those people, not to let those voices put you off something that would be a good idea for a variety of reasons, if, you know, one of the reasons being given is to assuage that kind of feeling, that kind of thinking, that the massive difference between being a huge racist or even a small racist and having hopes that illegal immigration, illegal migration can be properly addressed seems to be a difference that many, many people in my industry particularly are determined to completely ignore. We are here. A senior minister told The Observer that Sir Keir Starmer had ordered a comprehensive and expansive look at the role technology can play in government, including digital ID. Some people worry about Tony Blair's proximity to the kind of corporations that might be providing this sort of digital ID. I'm very keen to hear you explain what those reservations are and indeed to reveal whether or not you share them. I'm having to press pause on my screen because some people are taking this rather seriously and pointing out that they have other forms of ID that could be considered to be important, but some people are taking it less seriously, including Ollie, who's been in touch to tell me that he still has a Blockbuster card. How much is on your phone? How much of your ID is on your phone? They've got your number. They've got your details. They probably know who you are. I know you could have a burner and what have you, but there's a lot there, isn't there? Paul's Tesco club card will reveal to whoever got hold of it what all of his appetites involved quite possibly what he was having for tea tonight. So I wonder, sitting here in 2025, opening this conversation with a reference to a film set in the 1940s that probably came out in the 1960s, I didn't double check, whether or not the world has turned so much that the whole concept of an ID card means something very different in the 21st century to what it would have meant in the early 20th century. I also think we need a word for this. This is one of those topics where windows to other countries would be, or windows from other countries would be really helpful. The idea that we sit here wringing our hands and having philosophical debates about the notion of a digital ID card feels not only anachronistic, potentially, but also insular. I want to know what happens in other countries and whether or not any problems have presented themselves. How do you feel, as somebody with perhaps a foot in two populations, about the United Kingdom's historic resistance to this idea? And where does that resistance come from? So if the objections to the latest plans are practical rather than philosophical, it falls to us to examine what the philosophical objections are. I don't know if you were listening last week when we talked about facial recognition technology and by Fred Scott at Uxbridge, and it pains me to say this because he'll never let me forget. I think he may have closed down the entire conversation forever when it comes to future sinister regimes by pointing out that if a future sinister regime were to come in to power tomorrow, the first thing they would do is all the sinister things that we were worried about a future sinister regime doing. So it's all very well saying, I like ID cards now, but imagine if a British Donald Trump got into power, where would we be then? If a British Donald Trump got into power and thought that he could accelerate his evil mission by bringing in digital ID cards, he'd bring in digital ID cards tomorrow. Ditto facial recognition technology. It's a splendid idea now in our pluralistic democracy, in our pluralistic liberal democracy, but what if a dictator got in? And then what would he do with it? Well, if a dictator got in, he would probably introduce facial recognition technology in a very malign and sinister way immediately. So it's not, I don't think, and I wouldn't mind you actually taking a swing at this, because I don't like zingers particularly, unless I've come up with them myself. I don't think that argument brooks much criticism, but if you think that it does, 03456060973. You also have a tax code, as Ben points out, your bank information. The data would simply establish that you are of this population, you are of this economy, you are part of this country. So what is not to like? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. You don't need ID cards. Here in Scandinavia, everybody is given a 10-digit person number. It's your date of birth plus four more digits. Everybody over 5 years old can recite it without hesitation. It's the first thing police, health or any government body asks for, says Julian, who's in Denmark. Well, what's the difference between that and a digital? Surely it's the same. And that's where the third element of this conversation kicks in, the technological side of it. What is the difference between a digital ID card, as is being mooted by the government, and I think reading between the lines seems very likely to come in, and all the other forms of ID that we have just listed? 03456060973. I don't know whether or not you would be required to carry it at all times, but again, if it were digital, that would not be a particularly challenging thing to do. We've seen e-visas for overseas citizens. They could become digital cards on mobile phones soon. You simply get to flash something to prove that you are who you say you are and you have every right to be wherever you are. And then as I say those words, I do find myself thinking of dystopian fiction. I do find myself thinking of worlds in which you might want to go below the radar. You might want to operate in the shadows, or you might want to keep some of your activities away from the authorities, who, of course, have the power to prescribe you or criminalise you for behaviours that they don't like. I mean, history is dotted with examples of things that were illegal once and are not illegal now, or things that are illegal now and were not illegal then. So I can't really think of anything at the moment that would fit into that category, but it's a category we should at least acknowledge the existence of. And that, I suppose, opens the door to downsides that have been discovered in other countries. I'm pretty sure Spain has an ID card. I don't know whether it's digital or not, but it wouldn't be an enormous leap, would it, from a paper one or a plastic one to a digital one. And the records of traditional cards are going to be digital anyway. The records are going to be online. There's a Dutch ID card. I can use it to travel around Europe, says Phil, rubbing in the fact that we don't, of course, have freedom of movement anymore in this country as a consequence of another story in the news today that I will touch on a little later. I've also got the biggest rat in Britain, and we are talking about rodents here, not politics. The biggest rat in Britain has been discovered. Historic listeners to this programme will know that I get quite excited when we discover enormous rats, for reasons I haven't ever fully established, but this one found in North Yorkshire is absolutely blooming enormous and speaks to a much bigger problem. And I'm also looking at this documentary that Channel 4 have come in for criticism over, involving a young woman who... I'd never sound more sort of prurient than I do when I discuss things like this. A young woman having sex with more than 1,000 men, and the question of whether or not that really is the sort of thing that A, qualifies for documentary treatment, and B, Channel 4 should be screening at all. Some of their advertisers argue not. The time now is 10:16. The question is about ID cards, digital ID cards. What don't you like about them, or what happens or what has happened in other countries where they have been introduced? And remember, I'm not focusing exclusively on the philosophical, but give me a really strong reason why you don't like the idea. And that will take us, of course, to the question of why you don't like the practice. That's the bridge between the philosophical and the practical. I don't like the idea because, and then the rest of us perhaps will come away a little bit more, a little bit less enthusiastic about the idea of carrying one around in our phones all the time.
LBC. Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
Train to Worthing for scuba training. Yep, we're that family now.
Josh, flip us off until you're in the water, mate.
Well, I look ridiculous, but they're loving it.
Muddy, goggles the other way around, sweetie.
Ah, seats found, kids happy. Heading home. Definitely bringing these wetsuits to our next beach day.
Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
I suppose the phrase I'm interested in exploring with you is erosion of civil liberties. And that is a bad thing, the erosion of civil liberties. And I'm pretty sure that if I'd sat here 10 years ago, I would have felt that a sort of nationwide ID card, whether digital or not, was an erosion of civil liberties. But that would perhaps have been because I hadn't thought about it very deeply. And we are thinking about it now. I think Lauren puts it well. The whole idea offends my libertarian sensibilities. I oppose it primarily on that basis. More immediately, I am gravely concerned with what the far-right government we are on track to have would do with this. It doesn't seem to have a lot of forethought to it, has it? Okay, but tell me what you're worried about happening. I don't think you can hide very effectively in this country if you want to. What do you do? Live in the woods? And how would having a digital ID card make you any less free or compromise potentially your civil liberties at all? I guess that's the practical. And so I want to explore the philosophical with a rather healthy side order of practical. Jack's in Aberystwyth. Jack, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. Nice to speak to you again. The problem that I see with it in this country specifically is, like, take for example the Online Safety Act that's just come into place recently.
Yes.
The problem is that I wouldn't mind so much if I was putting my ID or putting my facial biometrics into the government system, but because it's being put off to third-party companies based in America, where I have no idea of their rules and regulations. I don't trust their security because the companies like this get hacked all the time nowadays. Just look at Marks and Spencer's and Co-op for an example. That's my worry, that I just see that the United Kingdom are not going to create an ID system. If they were to create an ID system, they're not going to make it a centralised government system one where you're putting it into the government system.
But
they're going to put it off to America.
It's your name. Right? No, well, let's not get too theoretical and speculative. It's your name, some biographical details, and a unique number that will be on the system. What are you worried that a bad actor could do with that at some unspecified point in the future?
Just fraud in general. Like
I'm going to need a little bit more. What do you mean fraud in general?
We see identity fraud all the time when people lose their. It's like if people lose their passports.
Yeah, but this makes it harder to pretend to be you, not easier. It's literally a guard against the kind of ID fraud that you're talking about. It's a digital ID card. You can't steal a digital ID card as easily as you can steal a passport.
You say that, but
I say it because it's true. I mean, literally, here's a passport. I've nicked it. I'm pretending to be you. Here's a digital ID card that is going to have some sort of biometric dimension, whether it's your thumbprint or facial recognition. It's a million times harder to conduct ID fraud with. That's one of the reasons for bringing them in, Jack, for goodness sake.
The problem is the more the fact of the security of keeping hold of those IDs.
Well, then I'd ask you again, what are you worried they're going to do with your ID number?
To commit fraud in general.
But you can't commit fraud in general. It's harder to pretend to be you when this technology exists.
I'm not entirely sure.
Nor are you entirely in possession of valid counter-arguments, except, and forgive me, because we all suffer from this, so I don't want to sound patronising. You've got the feels, right? You've got a vibe. You're describing a vibe to me, Jack.
Well, because of things I've read 1984 by George Orwell.
Yeah, that's a vibe. That's a vibe.
It's a dystopian vibe of, like, I don't feel comfortable with it.
Feel comfortable with a passport. You wouldn't feel comfortable with a social security number or a national insurance number or an NHS number or a Tesco club card.
But the difference is that those systems are in the government system, where there are going to be at least some safety, their security.
This is the government system. This is the. I mean, this is perhaps the difficulty in bridging the philosophical and the practical, because I don't want to describe philosophical objections as being mere vibes. I can't really give Jack a tough time for citing Orwell when I've already said that my in unarticulated misgivings are about dystopian fiction, of which 1984 is the absolute masterclass. But unless you can say to me, I'm worried that this would happen, I don't quite know what I'm supposed to do with these feelings, with these vibes. And if the thing you're going to say could happen is ID fraud, and my admittedly slightly entry-level understanding of the entire issue is that this is likely to make it harder to commit ID fraud, then the vibe becomes even less persuasive, perhaps. Thank you, Jack. Do you know, I mean, it sounds a bit lazy when you complain about Aberystwyth's fine, but some Welsh towns I see on the screen and I think, oh, I'm really going to struggle with this one. And then we come to Carl in Iceland.
Yes, hello, James.
Whereabouts in Iceland, Carl?
It's called Hafnarfjörður.
Yeah, there's no way.
There was no way
I was going to have a crack at that, mate. I nearly said the last lad was in Wales, but as opposed to Aberystwyth. But there's no way I'm going for Hafnarfjörður.
No. I'll give you a free one on that.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
You've already. It was very interesting listening to your conversation with the previous caller.
Mm.
You have correctly pointed, or somebody pointed you to the Nordic countries system,
yes.
And that includes Iceland. Now, the interesting thing is, before I go any further, is that Scotland, namely the health service in Scotland, already has exactly that system on their records. That is how they keep their records. It's called a CHI or a CHI number.
Okay.
And it is precisely the same concept. But then everybody else, as you earlier pointed out, there are all these different authorities with their own database. Imagine if they had one single database for everybody, how easy it would be.
Yes.
Now, the civil rights, I would say that, yes, you are absolutely correct. Civil rights are not impacted. If anything, they are strengthened by this. You don't need an ID card, by the way. I don't know anybody in Iceland who actually has an ID card. They just use their number. My son, on an Icelandic passport, went to Denmark to work for a while, a couple of years or something.
Yeah.
On arrival, he went to a single office, and he had to wait in the queue for, I think, something like half an hour.
Yeah.
Within 15 minutes, he was registered for tax, for national health, and everything else, including getting a GP assigned on the basis of that single number.
Wow. How did he, in that office, prove he was who he said he was? Because I could be in possession of someone else's number, so how did they prove?
Yeah, absolutely. Correct. He had his Icelandic passport with him, which he plonked on the counter, and they went into the database, and the Nordic countries are interconnected, so the databases can be accessed by authorized authorities, namely the government of each country.
And if that passport had been dodgy or stolen or forged, they'd have spotted it immediately. So the ID fraud point, which I think I was right in saying to the last caller, the worries about identity fraud diminish with this technology rather than increase.
I absolutely agree with you, 100%, James.
So what's not to like, except this, what I'm going to somewhat annoyingly and possibly offensively just describe as vibes. People just have vibes. And I can say that because I used to have them myself, vibes. I've got bad vibes about this. But the more we talk about it and the more we learn about it, the more inappropriate the vibes become. Thank you, Carl.
Absolutely.
It's
a pleasure.
What's the talk radio business like in Iceland?
There are several stations. Of course, the population is so small that they all have a small listenership, but nevertheless, they have an impact like yours.
Good.
But not to the same extent on the same subjects.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you've chosen us this morning, because that was a very helpful insight. It's coming up to 10:28. That, and there it is. I we have almost identical technology in place, and it hasn't caused any harm. So here's another vibe. I'd share it with you shortly. But if it's a feeling that you're describing to me, then I just don't know that it's enough for me to object to the facts, to the practicalities of it. Hi, James. Writes Chris, I normally balk at erosions of civil liberties, but I'm all for this. If not routinely required to carry on a smartphone, for example, it makes perfect sense to link all current IDs under one. Is this turning into a tension between the vibes and the reality? As Karen says, I don't want to feel tracked. I want to be able to be private. Well, that's a vibe, Karen. I remember when Farage said he didn't like Oyster cards because they tracked him as he made his way around London. And someone pointed out that if you go anywhere in a car in this country with automatic number plate recognition, then they can find you in a heartbeat. A vibe says, oh, I don't know if I like that idea of being tracked and followed everywhere. But what if they're looking for someone that has just undertaken a terror attack? Or what if they're looking for someone who's hurt you or yours? What if they are looking for somebody who is trying to evade the authorities for extremely nefarious reasons? So then your pendulum swings back and you go, oh, yeah, no, I'm in favour of that sort of thing. And then it swings back again because someone else says, well, hang on, what if that technology got into the hands of a latter-day real-life big brother? Or if the company that were running it were not trustworthy? Well, then you'd have to find out the details in that moment and establish whether or not moving forward looked like a good idea or not. It's coming up to 10:30. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And what was the name of the lovely bloke in Aberystwyth? I've forgotten his name. Was it Robert? Either way, he mentions the Online Safety Act, and we should be talking a little bit more about that. Jess Phillips has written a characteristically a powerful piece in one newspaper today explaining just how ridiculous it is to make some of the criticisms. It was Jack, wasn't it, that some of the criticisms that some of the usual suspects are making against this. She speaks, of course, as the Minister for Safeguarding and Violence Against Women and Girls. So you've got the Minister for Safeguarding, who's dedicated her entire professional life, pretty much, to safeguarding women and girls. And then you've got a bloke who is regularly photographed with people like Andrew Tate and Conor McGregor. And you're being asked to choose between those two people when it comes to the question of who might have the best interests of women and girls closer to their heart. And, well, I'd go Jess Phillips all day long. 10:30 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
A Met Office danger to life warning has taken effect across Scotland because of Storm Floris. Some trains and ferry services have already been cancelled, with more likely to be affected. The Tories say the latest announcement on tackling English Channel migration is just tinkering at the edges. A further £100 million will support the pilot of the one-in, one-out returns deal with France. Millions of drivers could receive hundreds of pounds each as part of a motor finance compensation scheme. The Financial Conduct Authority is to consult on a claims system following Friday's Supreme Court ruling. LBC weather, very strong winds and heavy rain from the storm, turning drier from the west later. A high of 24 degrees.
LBC.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from, too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
For a whole year, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 33 minutes after 10. It's a long and growing list. Mobile phones, which of course contain biometric testing. That's how you open your phone for most people. Driving licenses, bus passes, travel cards, credit cards, passports, Facebook, TikTok, ANPR, facial recognition technology, Alexa. There's all sorts of areas where your data is stored already. So why not have, for the benefits of governance, a centralized database of citizens or residents, which would make access to public services much easier. It would actually increase enfranchisement in terms of voting, if indeed there is much need for that. I always remember Jacob Rees-Mogg letting the cat out of the bag when the Tories brought in the need for more ID in order to vote, and it turned out that older people were therefore put off voting, and he kind of let it slip that the only reason they'd brought it in was because they thought it would be potential Labour voters that wouldn't turn up to vote, and it turned out to be potential Tory voters. So again, no downsides to it there. You've got the NHS app, or the CHI if you're in Scotland, if I've pronounced that correctly. And loads of other people in loads of other countries getting in touch to tell me that they have this technology already and they have absolutely no problems with it whatsoever. But what if we're all wrong? What if that long and growing list, 10, 20, 30 years hence, sounds like a death knell or proves to be some sort of canary down a dystopian coal mine? I just need something that's not a vibe. I need a kind of theoretical, plausible future in which this stuff would be bad. Because I look at what ICE is doing in the United States of America, and it doesn't matter what laws or safeguards you've got in place. If it comes with presidential approval, you can send masked people onto the streets of a previously pluralistic liberal democracy to sweep up whoever they want with no pretext whatsoever. 10:35 is the time. Gosh, we're touring the world today. Peter is in Biot in the south of France. Peter, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello, Peter.
Yes, well, I'm saying that I'm not averse to this if it were to replace passports. And I can't see any reason why it couldn't. I mean, to add it on additionally, to me, it's just a pain, quite honestly. And probably something we're not going to get much choice in anyway when you talk about vibes.
You can tour a lot of Europe on just a national ID card, can't you?
I would imagine so.
Well, you're there. Well, I'm there as well, technically. But you're in the south of France. Well, I suppose if you're a Brit, you don't have the technology. But a lot of Scandinavians in particular are telling me that they can travel around continental Europe without a passport. So if we had a digital ID card, what parts would it not reach that a passport currently reaches? I can't really think of
it. Well, I don't think it would, because, I mean, when we come into a country, we put a passport in that little machine, and it takes all the information off there, off your photograph and everything. So why can't an ID card effectively replace that with all the information we have anyway on our passport?
There might be a reason. Someone listening will know it, but I can't currently see it. What about fears of the overreach, the totalitarian dimension to the whole conversation?
James, with the present government, you're not going to get away from that one.
Well, I mean, it should put you off in that case, shouldn't it?
Well, I said if it replaced the passport, if it could have everything on one card, it would be brilliant. Rather than, I mean, some establishments used to ask for, have you got a driving license? Others were,
Yeah. Well, no, because you know, because no, I knew there was something here. So what you have to be able to prove that you are the legal owner of that number, of that digital ID. Yeah, but then where is that going to be? It's going to be on something like a passport. You'd probably need, if you were right, if I come to Biot and I want to set up home there, I walk into the mayor's office and I've got my digital ID card that proves most of what I need to prove, but I would need something secondary to prove that I haven't nicked the thing that I'm presenting to them, wouldn't I?
Well, hang on. What's the difference between that and a nicked passport with your photographs on it?
I've got a digital ID and I've got a real passport, and they'd put it into the system and they'd establish it was nicked immediately.
Right, OK. Fair enough. Well,
I've got this covered, Peter. Keep them coming.
You have, but I still think it would be nice.
Why have you got such a problem with passports? Why have you got such a problem with passports?
Well, it's not that, it's just...
It is. You're sounding very passportist.
Maybe I'm driving licensed as well.
I've never thought of a passport as being an inconvenience. I suppose unless you've lost it, in which case it can be an absolute nightmare. Thank you, Peter. Have a good day. Roy is in Palmer's Green. Roy, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James. I've got a couple of points. Government already has an appalling track record of trying to implement large IT projects. You remember Track and Trace a couple of years back?
Yeah, Boris Johnson said that was brilliant.
Okay. You know, they've already tried to unify data across the various different bits of the NHS, and that's generally failed as well.
Mm.
So that's one thing. The other point is that...
It's not a reason, just because something's gone wrong in the past isn't a reason not to do it in the future. And to be fair to this government, they are describing the problems as practical rather than philosophical. So I imagine, and far be it from me to... make excuses for... Who was it? Was it Dido Harding? Was she the person that Boris Johnson put in charge?
It was Dido. Lovely Dido.
Far be it from me to gallop to her defence, but I would imagine that if we were to dig into the weeds of what went wrong, the speed and urgency would have been big factors, and both of those can be removed from the equation here, can't they?
And how comes? Because it'll be the same.
No, because it's not going to be a massive panic to do it. It's not going to be a massive panic. We've got to get it done tomorrow. They're going to really take their time and get it right.
But then, okay, moving on. The government record of looking after data is pretty appalling as well. And if you just look at the most recent example, the Afghan refugees data.
That's a brilliant example. But I don't know that it's relevant because...
personal data.
No, I know. But how would my safety be put at risk by a leak of my... digital data in my own country?
Well, put it this way, if we had that kind of central database, data warehouse with all of our personal data, it'll become a magnet for hackers, fraudsters, and bad actors.
But why? Why would it?
Because it's personal data, and personal data...
But it's not, is it? It's just literally identification.
And identification is going to be based on people's personal data. Whether it's passport data,
but that already exists. All the things you've just listed already exist. The passports, the driving licenses, the NHS. What about the NHS number? Are you opposed to the NHS number?
No, not at all, not at all. But the thing about it, it's diverse. It's in different repositories. Once you centralise and look in a single location, all of that data, it's going to be a gold mine.
Why?
Because it's all in one house. It's all your eggs in one basket. So you attack that basket, and you've got access to all the eggs.
I mean, well played on the analogy front, but I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg, because I don't know what the objection is. Give me a concrete example of what they could do with this data that they can't do with the data that is already hackable.
No, but it's already hackable, but the point is, rather than them trying to hack it in half a dozen different locations or a dozen, they now only have to attempt one location.
Yeah, but what are they going to do with it that I should be worried about?
They'll be selling off to their bad actors all over the world.
What are they going to do with it? I don't want to keep going around in circles. What should I be fighting off? Because they won't be able to pretend to be me unless they are me. That's the nature of the sort of biometric element of it, or the proving that you are who it says you are. It'll just be a massive list of names and numbers. And in the case of the Afghans, that was incredibly hazardous, because knowing their names and knowing that they were on this list would be enough for them to be targeted by the Taliban. And that's why I don't think I should be as concerned as you are about the prospect of my data being hacked, because they would have my name and they would have a number. They wouldn't be able to open bank accounts with it or anything like that, because only I would be able to do that. They'd have to be the match-up. So unless there is a sort of future in which your own government is the Taliban and your own association with a... But no, because even then, it's just ID. It doesn't even... The government ID in the case of the Afghans was contextual. These were people that had assisted our forces. There's no context here. It's just ID. I could be sounding incredibly naive, and I'm more than happy to be schooled on why, but that particular parallel doesn't, for me at least, reach the parts that Roy thinks it reaches. Steve's in Paris. Steve, what would you like to say?
I'd like to school you on your naivety, please, James.
That was bloody quick. Flip it, heck, honestly. You wait ages to be schooled on your naivety. Carry on, Steve.
I'll stand there in the rain and do that. My son is trans. He's just started on testosterone, and in a year or two or three or four, he'll probably be indistinguishable from a 20-something young man. But if this is on his record... You don't feel there's any risk in your data being available to either the government or whichever company they parcel out the contract to, or whoever hacks into it. But you're a middle class, respectable Christian looking kind of white guy.
Middle class. I'm definitely middle class. I don't know. Respectable's pushing it. I take your point. But your son, record, and I know you didn't mean this, but your son is completely respectable as well.
Of course. Yes, but there are plausible Yes. There's plausible turns in the road in the near future in which we have something akin to fascism in either coalition government or government in this country, let alone others in Europe that people might want to travel to, yes. who've got characteristics that might well be on that card. We don't know what it would be yet.
Yes.
And might well be therefore visible to immigration at whatever country they flash their little card at.
So your son's ID would... I mean, would deed poll help? I mean, it doesn't necessarily have the consent. Well, let's say it doesn't have his birth name.
No, this would be one of the details that we have to be absolutely sure about. And given that some of your previous callers have talked about, you know, concatenating, that's your word for the week, concatenating all your data into one place, NHS, tax, all that sort of thing, your medical records would be, presumably, in one plausible scenario, accessible through this system, or at least visible to this system. And if there's not very great deal of care attached to this, then I'm only talking about trans people here.
I know, and it is theoretical.
I imagine there's lots and lots of other very small demographics, you know, 0.25%, 0.5%, 1% of the population who are looking at this with a very, very, very jaundiced eye.
But all of these points could be addressed, couldn't they? You just want to be sure that they are.
Well, the problem with...
You choose your name. We all choose our name. I mean...
It's the fact that you've gone through gender reassignment surgery. Would, you know, that there's a record of that. That wouldn't be at the moment.
Well, you just need reassuring that there's no earthly way that would be on your ID card any more than a tonsillectomy would be.
But how do we know? Let's thought...
Well, how do we know anything?
The fact of having to show it is the big issue here, because we talked about passports. You can choose not to have a passport. You just say, all right, I won't travel abroad except for Ireland then. Yeah. You can choose not to have a driving licence. You can choose not to have a phone or have a dumb phone. But nearly everything is by choice. But this would be one of those things that you have to have.
Well, you can't access the NHS without ID.
You can.
Can you?
Yeah, as long as you're registered with them.
That's what I mean. You can't register without ID.
But you have to tell them who you are, but they don't necessarily know all your details.
Well, exactly. So you've just talked yourself around.
Okay. Well, leave the NHS.
They have to tell you who they are, but they don't have to tell you. They don't have to tell them all your details.
But the NHS.
They'll have your NHS number.
The NHS doesn't have to currently share its information with the police or the secret police or the French secret police.
That's a vibe.
I'm building something on my vibe, but this is real. If you talk to people who are trans, they're very scared of the idea of having full government access to every detail of their lives that is recorded somewhere officially, and that being in a place that you have to use for certain things, like, say, renting a flat, which is one of the things that have been posited. Hey, we can get rid of illegal landlords and dodgy renters if we have ID cards. Okay, well, now I've got to show it when I rent a flat, or hire a car. Really? Yeah. These are terrifying things.
They're terrifying if they're true. And hang on. And what you would need to be reassured of was that the identification, the ID, did not contain any characteristics or experiences. And I mean, you're a very loving father, and I mean that in the purest and most admiring way. And unless I was in your shoes, I can't say for certain that it is easily addressed. But from where I'm sitting at the moment, these are all things that a government could address, and they are not problems that would be unique to a digital ID card.
Once the system is in place, James, it can be changed. And it's not in place at the moment.
Yeah, no, but then and the bad people get in the future. Yeah, they're going to do the bad stuff anyway. Yes, exactly.
But why make it easy for them?
Because in the simplest of terms, it makes everything easier for everybody.
How much easier? I mean, how long does it take to get a passport now? How long does it take to rent a flat? No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does.
I got a new passport through the government ID system, which is already in
existence. Through the what?
The government gateway, which is my other point. This already exists.
Well, that's my point. That can't be your point. That's my point. It already exists. So what are we particularly worried about?
Government gateway, which is where you go on to pay your tax, which I did at 2 o'clock this morning because I woke up.
Well done.
So you go on there, it knows who you are, but it's only for certain purposes. It's not transliterated across to anything else.
Transliterated and concatenation today.
Words of the week, and it's only Monday
morning. You're way ahead. It's not even 11 o'clock on Monday morning. And I am not here to dismiss or even diminish your paternal concern. I'm really not. And so these objections stand until they don't. And it may well be that the reassurances are not available. Nonetheless, as Steve would concede, this does get filed under things that other future governments may do with technology that the government introducing the technology would not do. And you decide if it was your child in the potential future firing line, you'd probably be a little bit less sanguine about it than I am and a little bit closer to Steve's position. Probably, not definitely. Thank you, mate. 10:48 is the time.
Coming up this week on Tom Swarbrick. VPN downloads soar after the Online Safety Act takes effect. I'll speak to a high-profile porn star. Plus,
some of those kids are, that's real starvation stuff. I see it. And you can't fake that.
President Trump's envoy visits Gaza as the humanitarian crisis worsens. I'll be joined by the broadcaster Mehdi Hassan. And I'm assembling Pensioners Row, a panel of senior citizens. Join forces to take me on about the triple lock.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved. You stepped up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Make the O2 your playground this summer. Test your football skills at Toka Social, take to the skies at iFly indoor skydiving, or challenge your friends at Boom Battle Bar. Let the kids burn off energy at Oxygen Active Play, perfect your game at Paddle Social Club, or test your reflexes in the world of Activate. There's something for everyone at the O2. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavors from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with the McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house,
and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, stop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
10:52 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. This is an interesting question. Is there a case to be made that if we become too reliant on digital ID cards, some sort of future cyber hack could bring the entire country to a standstill? I don't know, is the short answer. I wouldn't know, would I? But that perhaps is part of the reason why the government is described as approaching problems of a practical nature, having essentially overcome problems of a philosophical nature, or, if you're being a bit rude and present a radio program, vibes. So it's funny, isn't it? If I like something, I'll describe it as a philosophical objection, and if I don't like it, I'll say, oh, that's just a vibe. It's just rude. I apologise. 10:52. Gary's in Calais. It's very international. But I said that, didn't I? I said I want international contributions, and now I'm not complaining about it, but noting it. Gary, come on, allez-vous.
Indeed, sir. I'm very well.
What's on your mind?
I'm looking at two cards in my hand now.
Yeah.
The first card is
Jack of clubs.
Ace of spades. is the is I've got my card caesura. Now, when I had to apply for my permanent residence and got that card, I never went, oh, my God, I've got to get a card. No. I went, whoopee-doo, I'm actually in the system.
Yes, yes.
That was the first thing I looked at. Now, on that card, on the back of it, is my biometric details, which are fingerprints, eyes, etc., photo on the front, and it says, by the way, this is who I am, this is where I was born, this is my residence, and by the way, I've got permission to work in France and within the area, etc. That's a card.
Yeah.
Now, that card, I very rarely get asked to be shown. Normally, if I go back to the UK, I show it to the French border guard lads, and they take it, takes about 5 seconds. I wave it at the British ones where they go, we don't need to need that. And I go, no, but I'm going to wave it at you anyway to say I've got one.
Yes.
Now, that's the only time I very, very rarely get to see it. If I go anywhere else, Germany, Spain, Belgium, wherever, very rarely get asked to see it. In fact, only if there's a terrorist thing on the way, something like that, they might pull you over in a card. Can we see your card? Thanks very much, Gary. We know who you are. On you go, make your way safely.
Yeah. But that makes sense to me, this. This is what, I mean...
It does, and
presumably if you wanted to get married or something like that, or if you were changing jobs, or if you would do, if you were engaging with the state apparatus at a level most of us don't do very regularly, but do occasionally, then you'd produce it then as well.
Well, that goes on to a second card at that point.
Oh.
Okay, because what you've got here is your carte d'identité, which is your identification card. I might get asked to show that in the bank. But then you've got your card vitel.
Right.
Now, your card vitel is your assurance for sickness, basically the French NIS, which is second to none. That gets shown to the doctor, it gets shown to your pharmacist, and whenever you go into the hospital, etc. They put all your details on there. I can go onto any app that they've got here, and within about 4 hours, it'll say exactly what the doctor's been saying about me. I can investigate it right the way down.
So you're obviously on side with this and can't quite see what all the objections are. Is there a digital version of the carte de séjour?
That's what I'm holding and showing to you.
No, but that's not digital.
Well, there isn't a digital version, but your biometrics are held with on your card.
So you'd probably have the choice of people who don't have smartphones would have a card like the one you're carrying, and people who want to keep it on their phone because that makes life a lot easier could do, but they don't offer that option in France at the moment.
No, but the other thing as well, James, I would ask, if there'd have been identification cards back with the Windrush scandal, you wouldn't have had the Windrush scandal.
That's a really good point, actually. That's a really, really good point. Yeah, well, you just did.
Now, the other point, your producer asked me, well done, sir. Your producer asked me, why in France haven't they got a problem with it? France has been a bureaucracy since the revolution.
Yes.
Over 200 years. Therefore, it's almost in your genes that you are expected to be not followed everywhere, but to be a citizen, and they know where you are at any time. For your help, you're a citizen, and it's a two-way street.
So that's about the relationship between the citizen and the state feeling slightly different in France. A lot of people suggesting that you've absolutely nailed it. What about the other dimension? And I know you do a bit of work. I know that you do work in this field. The idea that it would somehow address migration issues and refugees.
Well, it would do, wouldn't it? Because all of a sudden, you stop someone. Can I see your identification card? Can I just see your ID? I haven't got one. Mm. We brought them out during the Second World War. You had them in the First World War as well.
Mm. And if your asylum application is being processed, then you will be in the system. You will have some form of proof of it, rather than the people. Well, unfortunately, as you know, we're probably being a bit overly optimistic when we think that people will hold a different view to genuine asylum seekers than they do to bogus ones. But if they are telling the truth when they say that they care about that distinction, then this addresses their concerns as well.
Absolutely. I just can't see the problem with it. Once I got mine, it solved so many problems. And when I'm out and about, it solves problems as well. It doesn't make problems.
Straight.
And if you're worried about... if you're worried about a fascist government coming in and taking your ID information, I'd be worried about the fascist government coming in per se, let alone that they've got to start using the mechanics of government to crack down on you, which they could do anyway.
Ask not for whom the cock crows, Gary, for it crows for thee. You take care, mate. It's 10:58. Straight from La Bouche de la Cheval, du Cheval. There you go. Straight with the horse's mouth. Someone currently carrying the kind of card that we would be talking about in this country. I'm going to squeeze in one more call, I think. Robert's in Oxford. Robert, what would you like to say?
Nice speaking to you again, James. I used to live in Italy, and I have to say that although the sensation when you live there, a bit like your previous caller, that the state knows everything about you, you feel just much safer about things. You don't worry about. I worry more about identity theft here than I did in Italy, because it's so hard to do anything there. You've got to prove everything, and that means it's difficult for thieves to prove things. So, for example, you can change your name here so incredibly easily. I never understood why. Why would you want to change your name if not for the various reasons?
Well, it depends what you were called in the first place, Robert. It's all very well for you with a nice, easy name like Robert, but if you'd been christened Rastapopoulos, you might have a rather different view.
Well, you don't know what my surname is.
And this is the point we've perhaps missed, is you need to see it as a marriage between the record and the biometric detail. So you need to marry the two together in order to do anything, which minimises fraud and, as you say, maximises a sense of security.
Yeah, and if you think about just one more case, I know you've got limited time, but if you'd had this system whereby people during the furlough system would have to list their the numbers, identity numbers of their staff members, spot checks could have checked if there was any fraud going on, and clamped down on so much money that was being paid out. Just by you stating how many people you employ rather than providing evidence of the people you actually employ.
I think we might be moving into what's not to like territory, thanks to you and Gary there. And amazing how many people contributing to that had experience of this sort of thing in other countries. And those of us with philosophical objections or vibes were doing it from the context of a theoretical future rather than an actual and experienced presence. I wonder how many people Pat speaks for when he points out that this is a very important discussion, James, but unfortunately I'm going to sack it off as we only need 35 runs to win the series. But you can do two things at the same time. You don't have to listen to the commentary. You can keep your eyes on that and your ears on this. It is, it's just gone 11 o'clock. In the next hour, I think I'm going to turn your attention to this documentary that really I don't know what to think about it.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, parts of Scotland are being hit by strong winds and heavy rain brought by Storm Floris. An amber alert warning of a danger to life is in place across central and northern Scotland until 11 o'clock tonight. Winds are expected to reach 85 miles per hour. LBC's Rebecca Brady, who is in Edinburgh, says there is already some travel disruption.
We know that many ferries have been cancelled with long delays on those that are running, and I can't see any trains running at all. We were told they would stop at midday, but I haven't seen a single one running at the moment. In fact, some operators, including TransPennine and LNER, have been warning passengers not to travel past the north of England into Scotland at all.
A trade body has warned the proposed compensation scheme for car finance mis-selling is completely impractical. The Finance and Leasing Association says firms may not hold data on deals dating back to 2007. The FCA regulator is now consulting on how the claims system will work. Its chief executive, Nikhil Rathi, has told LBC it should be as simple as possible for consumers.
It's going to be free, so you don't need to use claims management companies who will take up to 30% of any compensation you are owed. The legal judgment from the Supreme Court is complicated about what the definition of unfair is, so we've got a little bit of work to do in the next few weeks to work out the criteria.
A 31-year-old man and a 27-year-old woman have been arrested in connection with the death of a 1-year-old girl. The child was taken to hospital on the Isle of Wight on Friday, but died of her injuries in hospital yesterday. A man and woman have been charged with murder after a 26-year-old was stabbed to death in southeast London. The victim was found at a property in New Cross on Saturday night. Scotland's Deputy First Minister, Kate Forbes, has announced she will not be running for re-election as an MSP. The leading figure in the SNP will stay in Holyrood until the next election, due in May 2026. In the city, the FTSE 100, a short time ago, was trading at 91.12. That is up 43. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 14. LBC weather, those stormy conditions moving in, then turning drier with some sunny spells. Moving in from the west later, a high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 4 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It is the school holidays at the moment and you may not want the little ones to listen to, I don't think you will, but that might be part of the problem that we're about to discuss. I'm pretty sure you wouldn't, depending on how old they are. So I have a slightly odd tendency to prurience. I'm not what you would call a Puritan, but I don't really buy into a lot of the dissemination of sex that has been increasingly commonplace in the course of my adult life. By that, I mean, I can't quite see the point in Channel 4 deciding to broadcast a documentary about a young woman who was filmed having sex with 1,057 men over the course of 12 hours. I am, I hope, a feminist, and I have seen arguments that this is a feminist statement, almost, or a feminist act, and that it rescues sex from an area in which it is something done to women by men. And I can just about see the logic in that, but this is the point at which my own, I don't know if prurience is quite the right word, but my own, I guess it's partly my upbringing as well. Remember, if you were raised a Catholic, a proper, you know, a Catholic education, and you're my age, you were taught that all sorts of fiery destinations awaited you if you had sex before marriage, let alone with 1,057 people in the space of 12 hours. And you move on from that if you're lucky. Some people never do, of course. And yet, maybe there's still some vestiges there. I don't know. I'm being completely honest with you because I'm about to ask you to be completely honest with me. The idea that some of the ramifications of that kind of religious education remain with you long after you think you've shrugged them off. I don't know. It's not quite the question that we may end up asking, but the question of whether or not it is just, what's the other word? What would you say? What's the word you'd use for Mary Whitehouse or someone like that? So prurient isn't quite the right word, is it? Is this a Puritan isn't quite the right word? There's a word for it. So am I sounding da-da-da-da-da-da, like a fancy word of saying disapproving, but it's got a slightly more sophisticated subtext to it. It'll come to me, I'm sure it will, 6 minutes after 11. Some of the advertisers that would routinely have online advertisements alongside the streaming of this film have removed their advertisements, Visa and Smirnoff among them. And the contention is that this is not the sort of thing that they would want to be associated with, in which case the question becomes, is this the sort of thing that a British television channel should prude? I was only looking for the word prude. I'm trying to think of something really fancy. It's a combination between prurient and Puritan almost, isn't it? I was just looking for the word prude. I'm looking for something Latin in the back of my mind. Prude. I'm not a prude. I am not a prude. Methinks the man doth protest too much. I'm definitely not a prude. But I worry that this maybe sounds prudish. I'd have thought you know, like nudity in films or frank and open conversations about sex or recognising that children need to be taught things sometimes in school because they're not being taught them at home. All of these things are proof of my non-prudishness. Censorious could have been the word, but I'm running with prude. Thank you, Andrew and others. I guess that's it. That is the phone in, isn't it? Is it prudish to say that this stuff shouldn't really be on the telly? Or is it actually just correct this time and not evidence of some, I don't know, deeper discomfort with sex in general? Puritanical, sanctimonious, prudish, all the words are coming in now. I don't know whether you're helping me out or just insulting me. 8 minutes after 11 is the time. The film for, I mean, I've managed to swerve it. I know Sheila's spoken about it in very informed fashion. I've kind of swerved it because it makes me queasy. All right? I said it. It makes me queasy. A new pornography task force will propose legislation aimed at banning a type of barely legal content produced by this porn star, The Guardian reports this morning. And it is essentially the idea that she is having sex with boys who are barely legal. There's a clue in the title. And in the latest film, there is footage of her in a classroom, in a sort of mocked up classroom, preparing to film an orgy with a group of models dressed in school uniform. And they acknowledge, the performers, that they have been selected because they look very young. That's one part of this conversation, but it's not the central part. The central part is why you think this should or shouldn't be shown, all right? 0345 60 60 973. That's it. It's not a particularly deep introduction, this one. It's not a particularly layered or sophisticated introduction. I want to know why you think it should or shouldn't be shown. And I suppose I have to open the batting, don't I, by telling you why I think it shouldn't be shown. And the reason why I think it shouldn't be shown is, and this is where prudishness perhaps gives way to paternalism, is because I see this young woman very much as a victim of an industry. Even if she is entering into everything that she is doing with full cognizance and understanding, I'm reminded of a name from a very different era, whose life, when it ended, was reported in quite hair-raising fashion, and her name was Linda Lovelace, who starred in one of the very earliest pornographic films and who I think was also held up as some sort of feminist icon, but who was, it became clear later in her life, clearly being exploited and victimised by an industry. If she is in complete control, which she clearly is, then there are distinctions to be drawn. There are clear differences between her and previous pornographic stars, if that's the correct word to use. But I just don't like it. And it could be that that's a consequence of my age, my upbringing, and my outlook on life, and that I'm wrong. But I don't think Channel 4 has any business showing stuff like this. I really don't. Explain to me what the point is that this programme is designed to make. I'll tell you what Channel 4 say. They say it has industry standard controls, parental and otherwise, for its streaming services, so age-inappropriate content can't be seen by viewers under 18. It also says the documentary is compliant with the Ofcom broadcasting code, while the programme's explicit content is editorially justified and presented in a non-gratuitous way. But that's not what intrigues me here. That is the question. The question that intrigues me here is the question of whether or not this young woman should be embraced by and examined by the mainstream media. That's what intrigues me. You can't stop people filming themselves having sex with 1,000 men. That is freedom. I, as long as you are confident no one is being coerced or nobody is being, you can't be confident nobody's being exploited, but there's a lot of money on the table, and that money is yours if you do these things. That's capitalism. That's as old as humanity itself. I just worry. I think there was something on the front page of the Sunday Times magazine recently as well. It just seems to me to be a shame that we are now affording this level of fame and celebrity to somebody whose only contribution to the gaiety of life is to have had sex with 1,000 men on camera in the space of 12 hours. I'm not even completely articulating my own discomfort, which is fine and arguably quite a good thing in the context of the conversation that I'm hoping to have with you, because it's not the detail, it's the lionizing, it's the inflating, it's the public approbation almost. It's turning somebody into a star. And you'll come back to me and say, you know, there are plenty of women who are famous only because of sex tapes. And I'll say, yeah, but they weren't this extreme. It wasn't 1,000 men in the space of 12 hours. And you'll say, well, okay, so your issue then is the quantity. It's not the actual quality of what's been done, as in the content, the qualitative content. It's just the number of people involved. And that is the point at which I would, I think, have to say, yes, it is. And that's where I worry that maybe I'm being prudish or prurient or whatever word you prefer, puritanical. Why shouldn't she? If she wants to do that and there is a market for watching it, why shouldn't Channel 4 get involved? Answer, because. What answer would you give? 0345 60 60 973. I don't think any offences have been committed, and I don't think I sound like a latter-day Mary Whitehouse, but if you have a young woman whose sole claim to fame is having sex with an extraordinary number of men in an extraordinarily short amount of time, it just seems to me, when it is in the mainstream media, it seems to me to paint a picture of normality that I worry will be seen by impressionable minds. I'm in an absolute knot on this one, because I'm fairly confident I don't sound like a latter-day Mary Whitehouse. And yet, I can't quite find the words that I want to tell you why I wish this kind of thing wasn't being treated in the way that it's treated. I don't think it's my place to say. I probably would have done 20 years ago. I wish this woman wasn't doing what she's doing, because it can't be truly autonomous, and I feel very sorry for her. But that's me being patronising, perhaps. If history teaches us, if the future reveals the enormous regrets about this. I did see some footage in a previous film when she was crying as she recalled elements of what had happened to her. But then again, that's again, context is crucial. I just don't like the way society, for want of a better word, is treating her. I don't know what it says to young women, and I don't know completely what my problem is, but I want to know whether you have a problem. And if you don't, why not? 0345 60 60 973. And if you do, why? 034. It was a different film, I think, the one where a woman was crying. This woman goes by the name Bonnie Blue. Forgive me, I've got them mixed up, which I don't know whether that speaks volumes as well. 11:15 is the time. 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need. I can't do a phone in asking you to explain to me what my problem is with something, because I failed, and I'm normally quite good. I don't think this counts as showing off. I'm normally quite good at explaining myself or articulating my thoughts, but I can't. I can't quite put into words why this disturbs me so much. Can you? 0345 60 60 973. Or conversely, can you explain why either we shouldn't be disturbed at all, or it's utterly irrelevant if we are, because it has ultimately absolutely nothing to do with us, except it's on our tellies. 11:16.
This is LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
But 9.13% fixed annual return with Cufflink. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest, property-backed from £500. Hard not to agree. Visit cufflink.com. That's Cufflink. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to auto-invest and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA. Visit cufflink.com for full T's and C's.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes!
Georgie, is this too much glitter?
Yep, lost them. God, I offered to get drinks on my own.
It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and Cat. Oh, there they are. Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours to I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 18 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So many elements of this are troubling, but some, of course, are more troubling than others. Why do you feel that traditional media, mainstream media, Channel 4 specifically, has no business getting involved in the story of a young woman known chiefly for having had sex with 1,057 men over the course of 12 hours? Or can you tell me why I'm just being silly and missing something quite important and sticking my nose in where it really is neither needed nor wanted? 19 minutes after 11 is the time. And I don't think I even need to say this, but thank you in advance for treating the subject matter responsibly and cognizant of the fact that there may be people listening who are unaware of much of the detail of the story. I have not watched it. Normally I wouldn't talk to you about something I hadn't watched, and I'm never going to. I can't imagine anything less likely to pique my interest than a film like this, or this film in particular. And that, maybe, again, maybe that's a me problem. Claire's in Wimbledon. Claire, what do you think?
I did watch it, only out of morbid curiosity, I think, is the phrase we could use.
What other reason would there be? I mean, I can't imagine that it's titillating.
No, it wasn't. No, do you know why? Because there was so much said about this woman. I just wanted to know, see what she was all about. I don't know why. Okay, fair enough. But also, I watched it because I've got a girl and a boy, and it absolutely terrified me, this thing, because, like, the girls in the classroom scene looked very, very young. I mean, I know they were legal, but there was like one girl, she was saying, I'm basically on this OnlyFans thing and I'm get loads of people come and look at me because I look underage.
Yeah.
And that shocked the hell out of me. And I've got a 13-year-old girl and I just thought, oh my God, supposing she ever caught a glimpse of anything like this, maybe it might... I don't think she'd be that stupid. I really hope she wouldn't be that stupid.
Of
course. I hope I've taught her well. But it just made me think, oh my God, she might think this is a good idea. And like, basically, this woman has sort of dragged, to want of a better expression, these girls into this industry and made it look so glamorous and so fantastic. Like, it's just demoralising. And also, the other thing is, it was terrifying in terms of, I've got a son.
Yeah.
And she's basically, and I don't want him ending up thinking that women, because she's saying to these guys, oh, come and do this, that, and the other to me, I don't mind if you... I'll pleasure you this way and that way. I know you're not,
but you're making me nervous.
And it just made me just go, oh my God, would my son, if he watched something like this, go, well, this is how women wish to be treated. So it basically just terrified me, because everything we're doing as parents, everything we're trying to do to raise our kids to be right, and like, I know it sounds really probably old-fashioned, like it's a very special thing that you do with somebody when you meet the right person.
Yes.
Is it then encouraging them to go, actually, do you know what? It's all right to go and...
Well, the last
this,
bit,
other,
I think we could file the last bit under prudish, couldn't we? Or not at least prudish, but traditional. I mean, sex as a leisure activity is perfectly...
We've all had our balances, I'm sure.
Precisely, but this seems to speak to a very different thing, doesn't it? It does sort of... I mean, I'm trying to be the devil's advocate. I've already made my feelings clear, and they're obviously very close to yours, but the Online Safety Act notwithstanding, access to pornography where barely legal is a meme, where it's a big theme, is relatively straightforward. I doubt this would be an introduction to the genre for many of the people watching. And similarly, all pornography potentially teaches children unhealthy and unhelpful lessons about what sexual relations should and could involve, and the children who are unfortunate enough not to have better examples in their life or parents that they can talk to or people that they can learn from are always going to be more susceptible to these kind of malign influences than everybody else is. Is any of that a reason to not talk about it? I mean, that's the bit I can't put into words. I'm not quite sure what I'm complaining about. I can't complain about her existence. I can't complain about her job, for want of a better word. I can't complain about the men queuing up to help her do her job, again, for want of better phrases, because those are all issues of personal freedom. I don't like the fact that you...
I think it's the blaseness of it all, isn't
it? Yeah, maybe.
It's just so blase. It's just like, oh, you know, this is that. Oh, it doesn't matter. Come and do this to me. Come and do that to me. And I think also the term barely legal makes it very, very uncomfortable because...
But she didn't invent that. That's not on her. Far from it.
No, I know. But I think that's a terminology that makes it feel very, very uncomfortable because when you think of that, you do think young, very young, you know...
And that becomes a thing, and it's a thing that should make everybody queasy. But again, it's not down to her. I don't know that I can put into words the element. I mean, you came closest when you explained the reasons why you'd watched it, and I am now becoming part of that problem because if that was morbid curiosity, there'll be people listening to this who had no morbid curiosity about this woman 20 minutes ago because they'd never heard of her. And now they might have enough morbid curiosity to do what you did and put the actual program on. So can you have it? I hate this. It's a bit like when you say, oh, there's a big controversy about a photograph that's been printed. Go to the LBC website and look at it. It's so disingenuous. I worry I've just accidentally fallen into that trap myself. I really don't think that... Except no, because I'm saying this should not be. I'm not saying, oh, let's find out more about her. I'm not saying, oh, let's hear her feminist... credo or this, that or the other. I'm literally saying this stuff should not be on Channel 4's streaming platform and we should not be treating her like some sort of latter-day celebrity. And I categorically am not. But I could be creating the sort of morbid curiosity that prompted Claire to actually watch the programme. Thank you, Claire. I think you put yourself better than I'm managing to at the moment, but it's often the way. Tara's in Lewisham. Tara, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Hello, Tara. Can I just say... I think you're absolutely wonderful.
Is there a big butt coming?
I know there's some hatred going on YouTube and all that, but... Yeah.
There always is, that. Tara, but you're very kind. Carry on.
No, I'm just normal and accurate. Okay, so the Bonnie Blue situation, constant contention, constantly trying to outdo things with Lily Phillips, isn't she?
Yes, this is the young woman who I did see crying in another documentary programme that was made about her.
Yes, I've watched all too much YouTube stuff about the pair of them. Bonnie Blue, she's got glassy eyes, there's nothing behind them. And it's not...
I'm going to try and fix the phone line. It's just dropped out a bit, and we'll come back. But I mean, are those reasons to censorship isn't quite the word I'm looking for. Censorious might be, but can anyone do a better job than me of putting into words why this whole story makes them so uncomfortable? Layla's in Penge. Layla, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. First time speaking to you. Hi. I find it extremely uncomfortable. And I am somebody that has worked in the sex industry. I've skirted around it. I haven't done nothing like what she's done.
Okay.
So I'm very, very open-minded. I've done, exotic dancing. I've done peep show, bone sex, all that kind of stuff. So I'm extremely open-minded. But I'm 56 now, and when I see things that are going on, and this is, I mean, I only found out about Bonnie Blue through TikTok about 6 months ago.
Right.
And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? It's like, you know, it really frightens me, the thought of like being really young in this day and age. And it explains to me why young people aren't getting on. They can't mix. Because as far as young boys would be concerned, this is what women do, this is what women love, and that's how women should do it. And it's like, I feel for the young girls, it's like, but I don't want to do that. It's just awful, isn't it?
I mean, in a way, surely the jobs that you used to do were also an opportunity for men to indulge things that they couldn't indulge in their formal relationships, in their marriages or with their girlfriends, or if they were on their own. So why do we worry that this creates an idea that all women are like this any more than you might have done back in the day? Do you see what I mean?
I see what you mean, but I know that you don't really think that. I mean, it's like, it's completely different.
How to diffuse a phone-in host in one easy lesson. I know that you don't really think that, James. I think it a bit, Lena.
Like that comes to mind.
Yeah, okay. But I do think it a bit. I mean, in the context of the sex work, it is always designed to do something that men are not getting in their relationships or anywhere else. And that's what she would say she was doing, I think, perhaps.
Agreed, but it wasn't pushed out, it wasn't forced. Actually, to be honest, I was on a documentary all about working in the sex industry, and you had a prostitute, you had, movies, blue movies and all that, and you had strippers, and I was working in the Sunset Strip in Dean Street back in the day, and luckily... And I was one of the main two of us actually done a strip on the TV show. Yeah, but they ended up not putting it out on television. Since then, I had my son about a year and a half, 2 years later, and thank God they didn't. You know, at the time, I was like, doesn't that? Do you know what I mean?
Because, of course I
do. It's only stripping, but it's the last thing, you don't think about things when you grow up, my son would have been mortified, and that's just stripping. Imagine, I don't think she's got any children.
It'd be a very tricky conversation to have if she did at some point in the future become a parent. But that's up to her. Is it in a few words, what is it about what she's done that you find so objectionable compared to what lots of other women have done in lots of other areas of sex work over the years?
Well, she's not keeping it private. And to put it on a television. The Channel 4 documentary, that is making it even more accessible for everyone and anyone and children to see, which would be like, I mean, I was shocked a thousand men in such a short...
But that's the thing, though. I wonder if we are shocked by the numbers rather than the actual principle, as it were. Or maybe the numbers are part of the principle. Thank you, Leila. That was incredibly helpful. I'm going to read out a particularly tricky message, actually, because... it may be that this is articulating some of the reasons for my discomfort. Michael's in Aberdeen, and it's really given me pause for thought. I'll share that with you shortly. 11:30 is the time. Thomas Watts, how's your headline?
An amber danger to life weather warning is in force across much of Scotland. Storm Floris is expected to bring very strong winds and heavy rain with severe travel disruption expected. A 21-year-old man has been charged with the murder of a student from Saudi Arabia in Cambridge. Mohammed Al-Ghassim, who was on a 10-week language placement, was stabbed on Friday night. Millions of drivers could receive hundreds of pounds each as part of a motor finance compensation scheme, but an industry group has warned it's impractical because data on older agreements may have been deleted. LBC weather, very strong winds and heavy rain from the storm, turning drier with sunny spells moving in from the west, a high of 24 degrees.
LBC.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "All Change Please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from, too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 33 minutes after 11, and it's impossible, isn't it, to get genies back in bottles, or it almost always is. And it is the, I can't get the right verb, lionization, celebrification, if that's even a word, whatever it is, the way in which society or traditional media is treating a young woman who's claim to fame is having sex with lots and lots of men in relatively short periods of time, and is developing a sort of niche in which the men she has sex with look perilously close to being below the age of consent, although they are categorically not. I mean, there it is. That is it. She's filmed in a classroom preparing to film an orgy with a group of models dressed in school uniform who acknowledge that they have been selected because they look very young. Channel 4's not showing pornography. Some scenes from her work are shown in pixelated form. You would not, for example, need to register your age, prove your age before watching this. It wouldn't fall under the... Actually, the streaming services would restrict age-inappropriate content to viewers under 18, but I don't know how they can stop you from watching it in a room where someone over 18 has started watching it. That would be true in all sorts of other areas. Policing Minister has got involved, talking about the ease with which children could, in fact, access this documentary on the website. But I'm trying to have a slightly different conversation from that, and it's a conversation that worries me slightly, because I'll read you the main reason why. This is from Mike, and it really gave me pause. This is an absolutely appalling phone-in. Who in the hell do you think you are to sit there moralising on the perfectly legal choice of a grown adult? What if she likes and chooses this lifestyle? I've been really careful, mate, honestly, not to do that. I've been really careful simply to talk about whether or not we, in quotes, as a society, or in the case of the media and industry, should be normalising, promoting, celebrating, lionising somebody for doing what they are doing. I could think of a million different things, Michael, that a grown adult is doing because they like and choose to do it, but which we wouldn't be comfortable seeing them turned into celebrities for doing so. But as I said, you did give me pause, and he goes on. Farage and his ilk, God, he pops up everywhere, make a living demonising people from all walks of life for their perfectly legal choices, regardless of our thoughts on her choice of profession. To piously sit in judgment is a dreadfully ignorant look. I expected so much more from you. I thought that I'd been really careful not to do what you are describing, and I hope that we don't have another case in the future of a young woman or an older woman looking back on things that they did when they were young and feeling horrible about it. There are well-documented cases of that. The one I mentioned was Linda Lovelace, and I thought I'd done a good job of that, and I'm just going to back myself for the time being on the fact that I did. Alid been in touch to say Mike's clearly listening to a different radio show from the rest of us, but maybe you sent that when I was setting up the conversation and before I'd covered some of the ground that you were worried I wasn't going to cover. None of it changes the question of why I feel so uncomfortable about the way this story and this young woman are being treated in traditional mainstream media and society, to the point when Claire, our first caller, is drawn to watching the documentary out of what she described as morbid curiosity. Quite a few of you picking up on some of what Mike said and suggesting that that is not what they have been listening to. So, you know, I can't control what you hear. Cindy is in Burnham. Cindy, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello, James. Hello, first Cindy. Time caller, long time listener.
You're very welcome.
It's Thank you. I think a lot of what's been said, I agree with, in that it's what they're... we've got misogyny everywhere now with the lads being under the influence of people like Andrew Tate. And if it gets into their hands, they're going to think this is normalised behaviour. So that worries me.
Yes.
What adults watch is up to them. But if it falls into the wrong hands, and they're obviously trying to say... these are schoolgirls, no matter what their age, that's what they're portraying. And I just think teenage boys, they could think this is normal behaviour.
I don't think we know the half of it at the moment with regards to the damage that the ease of access to really extreme and violent pornography has done to mm-hmm. generations of young boys. I really don't, and that's why I welcome the Online Safety Act and hope that it goes at least somewhere towards cutting off that flow, that almost uncontrollable flow of content to young people. But is she part of that problem? I mean, she doesn't decide who watches it, does she? She's just doing her job and hoping that as many people watch it as possible. And it would be, I think you could argue, the job of Channel 4 to make sure that young and impressionable minds don't watch it. She's not responsible for who can and can't access the film about her. She's just responsible for her own choices and actions.
No, actually, I agree with you. I don't think it's anything to do with her. I'm just worried about the content and where it's going to be available to be accessed. There's too much now on the internet, and kids aren't having a childhood anymore. They're finding out too many things far too soon, and I think that's because of the internet, and this worries me that...
what do you think the line is that she's crossed? I mean, are we balking at the number of men involved in the most famous film that she's made?
Well, I think that's part of the problem. It's almost, I don't know, it smacks of gang rape to me. And
I know you know this, but
yeah,
everyone is. It's all entirely consensual. But okay, can I be the devil's advocate?
Go on.
We're judging her differently from how we would a man.
Yes, I suppose we are, really. And there's probably a lot of men that would balk at it and not want to see it.
But we're also saying that, or I am, I think, subconsciously, and I'm embarrassed by this, but I think it's probably been fairly obvious to everybody listening. I would not be talking in quite the same way about a man who was filmed having sex with 1,000 women in 12 hours.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do understand what you say. It's a different slant. It is definitely a different slant. I think it's just the schoolgirl thing and the
okay.
fact there's so
that's
many.
So you're going down the, well, forgive my choice of phrase, you're not going down the barely legal route at all, but that's the element of it that you're most troubled by, is the sexualisation of a school uniform. I mean, again, to be the devil's advocate, Britney Spears did that, but I wonder whether the more controversial area here is the very tradition. That's probably why subconsciously I started talking about being taught by nuns and monks and the Catholic religious education, is that we sit in judgment on women's sexual activity and on the number of sexual partners that women have in a way that we don't with men. And we are wrong to do that. That is wrong. I would hesitate to paint her as a sort of pioneer of trying to equalise that prejudice, but if you're going to be talking about a woman who's done what she's done with 1,057 men in a very different way from how you talk about a man doing what she'd done with 1,057 women, then you are actually pointing to a rather different problem. And that is a me problem, Cindy, not I don't think a you problem. Alec is in Manchester. Alec, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. Normally I'd say I'm not coming at this from a place of hate, but this time a little bit am.
From a what?
I hate what she's doing.
Yeah, go on, why?
I normally say I'm not coming from a place of hate, but
place of
I
hate.
Am this time.
Sure. Okay, but you hate what she's doing. You don't hate her or who she is. Or maybe you do.
I hate what she's promoting. I don't know her, so I can't say whether I hate her. But, I think this is the girl version of Andrew Tate, but it's legal. That's the thing. And I'm quite socially liberal as well.
Yeah.
So I'm prudish as hell. But, yeah, I'm quite liberal and it's legal. And that's the crux of it.
Well,
I don't think we should be...
No, but this is what I've tried to dig into is that no one is suggesting that she could be prevented from doing this, but I've just double-checked. I didn't imagine it. The Sunday Times magazine ran a cover article about her. Channel 4 are running documentaries. That's the bit where I wonder whether the free market is out of control and the only rationale for doing this stuff is the morbid curiosity that Claire talked about in the first call. And now I sound prudish because I'm saying I think we should all be a little bit better than this. I'm not suggesting for a minute she should be stopped from doing what she's doing, but should we really have conspired in making her a star?
I thought the point... So, yeah, I'll agree with you there. I don't think, like... we should be promoting her. If anything, I think people should be looking at this documentary as
a
sad thing.
I mean, most of our callers seem to have been in that category, Mike notwithstanding, although I think his treatment of my treatment was perhaps a little unfair. Thank you, Ali. Emma writes, teenage boys only think this is normal behaviour if adults constantly and relentlessly tell them that it is. I don't know that I agree with that. I mean, I can just about remember what it's like to be a 14-year-old boy. And I wouldn't be having philosophical conversations with anybody, least of all my parents, about what and was not available. But there was so little available that you didn't really need to. It was all... God, younger people, I find this impossible to believe. But you're talking about magazines that your mate had nicked off his dad. Or occasionally, this is a bit of an odd one, that people had found in a hedge. I've got no idea how that happened, but most people of my age recognise that practice. And so you didn't really have to have many conversations about what was and was not normal. But Emma goes on, our society has a problem discerning fantasy and reality. It doesn't mean we should take away the fantasy. We just relentlessly enforce the boundary of fake harmful and real harmless. You're seeing this as sex, when for her it's a performance. Physically strenuous and requiring care and endurance, but it's her choice. Again, I can't dispute that last bit, except with the little concern about how people may feel differently about what they've done in their 20s when they're in their 40s. I thought Layla was brilliant on that when she talked about being filmed at a strip club in Soho and then having a baby 18 months later and being very, very relieved that the footage didn't make the final cut of the film. But again, that's anecdote, not data. It doesn't prove anything. And just because you've gone down one path doesn't mean that someone else starting from the same place is going to go down the same path as you. So the idea that society... I mean, what is our job? Our job is to reflect what society is interested in. I'm thinking about you and me and the mornings we spend together every day. So how can I sit here and criticise any other attempts to dig into what is going on here when I am here to try to dig into what is going on? It's 11:45.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
You've been humiliated beyond all belief.
Straight to the point.
Just pull the plug. There's no conversation to be had here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's got worse. What is the problem they've got over there?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV, plus change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
When you're transported somewhere you've never been. When you discover hidden gems and amazing sights. When you just can't wait to pack your bags.
It's just stunning.
We should definitely go there.
I'm already looking at flights.
Nice.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy a world of travel from the comfort of your sofa. Search TV licence together.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow, rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn? I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda. Clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated in there, probably doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us. Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
There's always a lot going on. I'm on site, getting the job done, running the business too, payments, invoices, admin, all on me. But now with Tap to Pay, I can take payments there and then, and Sage sorts the admin afterwards. Everything's sorted in the background, so I don't spend hours doing it later. Magic.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience, helping British businesses like Mike at Residual Electrical Contractors. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:48. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mean, this is pretty hard to argue with. And I did open the conversation by conceding that we will all come to stories like this one with baggage, whether we can see that baggage or not. We don't need to tell teenagers that circus performers have dangerous careers or that action film stars don't really go around jumping through explosions. I find discomfort around this story seems to stem purely from hang-ups around sex. As for making documentaries about sex, sex work is human work, and reporting on sex work is future anthropology. I can intellectually nod along with all of that and accept or acknowledge that that intellectual explanation includes my emotional discombobulation. But I don't know whether or not it addresses the question of what we, society, media, whatever you want to choose, should do with a story like this one. I either completely ignore it, in which case I failed, either contribute to the process of lionization, in which case I haven't, or something in between the two. I don't know. And what determines public interest? The things that the public are interested in, or the things that are in the public interest? Sharon is in Rye. Sharon, what would you like to say?
Hello there. I watched the documentary with kind of a fair amount of horror and disgust, I'm not going to lie. However, mainly because I feel that she is going to regret it in years to come, but then that is completely up to her, obviously.
I hope not. Do you understand why I say that? I really hope not, because
it could ruin her life.
Yes.
However, there was a tiny little bit at the end of the documentary. It was only one comment, and I thought it was almost more damaging than anything else.
Yeah.
And that was when she and her PA or her assistant, whoever he was, said that they thought Andrew Tate was a genius. Marketing genius. Right. And it kind of is very upsetting that she's now kind of in the
abusive. Drew Tate in the abstract, if we can, because there are court cases unfolding, and talk about what he's done online that we know about. So, because, again, to be the devil's advocate, I don't think I've said it so often in the space of an hour in a very, very long time. He's made a ton of money out of doing stuff online, and that will be what they meant. That's all. The only reason they would have used the word genius is to describe the commercial success that he's enjoyed, doing things that you and I would disapprove of.
The way he behaves, though, for making money. And this means that it's kind of okay. This is like a thin end of another wedge.
Yes.
It's okay to do anything to make money.
Yes.
And that could lead to somebody trying to be more extreme in the future and more extreme after that, and so on it goes. It kind of terrifies me.
It terrifies me when you put it like that, but it's not her fault, is it?
No, but she's part of it, isn't she? Because she's doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and someone else will come along and try and break her record.
And who knows where it ends? Might go wrong at some point,
would be the correct approach? And the problem is, you've watched it.
Oh, yeah, I watched it.
So,
yeah.
For us, you can't watch it and say, I shouldn't have been able to watch it, can you?
I'm not saying I shouldn't have been able to watch it.
It shouldn't exist.
I was interested
because
things like this are happening, and I like to know these things like this are happening.
Sure, yes, I understand.
Because of information.
Yes.
And like somebody said, it's like, you know, just a curiosity, really. I'd heard her name, I heard what she was up to, and I just thought...
It becomes a snowball, doesn't it, in a way?
Yeah,
The more we talk about it, the more we...
And that's what's happening, I guess. But I just worry what's next as well, I suppose, and how it's okay to do anything to make money. That's my main point.
Yeah, but we could have had that conversation 1,000 years ago. Isn't there a scene in I, Claudius, where the Empress is having a kind of challenge with a courtesan, with a prostitute. And some of the stories about big figures of the past are just as hair-raising for the rest of us as some of these stories are. But yeah, there's something about the relationship between young people and the internet and this notion of influence seems to put this in a slightly different category. We would normally, thank you, Sharon, we would normally have used the words moral panic by now. We would normally have said, is this just another moral panic? But I would struggle, with the exception of the actress that I mentioned earlier and the film that she was in and the deep regrets and accounts of exploitation that she shared later in life. I don't know what else you would put on this trajectory, the trajectory that Sharon described there, the idea of what comes next. And so if I'm saying to you, is this just another moral panic? Normally, moral panics are about things like video games or drill music or rap. Just think of a sort of right-wing columnist or broadcaster and the things that they're pretending to be outraged about without understanding at all. Could this be put into that category? As a liberal, I'm not pretending to be outraged. I've tied myself in knots trying to explain exactly how I feel and what I think. But if I was pretending to be outraged by it, would it just be another moral panic? They come around as regular as buses. I can't remember what the last one was, but you probably can. Then what would be the precursor to this? Because if it is just another moral panic, it's ticking all the boxes that all the other moral panics have ticked as well. Oh, I don't think we've seen anything quite like this before. And oh, dear, I don't approve of that. And oh, dear, it's going to really corrupt the minds of young people. You see what I mean? It goes on. Mariana is in Leicester. Mariana, what would you like to say? No. Rachel's in Montpellier. Rachel, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello, Rachel.
I'm a little bit like you that's been sort of tying myself up in knots over this one. And, I mean, this is a really extreme example, but I've been kind of thinking about this subject for a while. And I've been coming at it from a slightly different angle.
Yeah.
Now, I'm in my 50s, and I have described myself as a feminist probably for 30 years. I'm not a prude.
Sure.
like the last chap suggested, that people who have a problem with this have a hang-ups over sex. I don't have hang-ups over sex.
Yeah.
I believe in women's rights. I believe that prostitution should be legalised. I have no problem with porn, to a limit, if
sure.
women aren't being damaged.
Yes.
But what I have a problem with this particular Bonnie Blue thing, and I haven't seen the documentary, but I have read a fair bit about it, because you can't miss it. It's
no, you
everywhere.
Really can't miss it.
It is the fact that alongside the story of what she has chosen to do, which is her right.
Yes,
she
absolutely.
Wants to have sex with a thousand men, that's entirely up to her. But the problem I have with it is alongside that story, you see female empowerment. And it's being presented as an example of female empowerment, that she can do this.
Yes.
And that is what I have a problem with, because, you know, I started working in a very male environment over 30 years ago now.
Yes.
And it was tough. You know, women working actually in you know, trying to come up the sort of promotional ladder and get a senior role 30 years ago and before that, obviously, was not easy, and particularly if you're in a male environment. And we had to work really hard to establish ourselves as professionals and to make sure that we weren't treated as a sex object, which was still happening in that environment. And you know, we fought so hard to get respect, and I think that's really had positive changes. You know, I think it's
but
so
you can't,
much easier
you can't,
for women
I
now.
I mean, but no one can sit here and forbid a young woman from choosing to be a sex object, can they?
No, and neither would I wish to.
No, I know you wouldn't.
But it's the amount of publicity it's having, and if it was balanced up by as much media coverage as female icons who were achieving amazing things, just in just not through sexualizing themselves, but just by being absolutely brilliant at what they do, then I think there would be a balance there which wouldn't make it so damaging. But with everything that is going on at the moment, and it's not just this story.
No,
you know, there are young women are being sexualized and choosing to sexualize themselves in lots of different
ways. And misogyny is being lionized. Misogyny is being championed and commoditized in a way I can't remember happening.
No, me neither.
So blatantly. And this plays into that narrative.
Well, I really want to go along with the female empowerment thing. And I've had this conversation with a lot of young women. But I really struggle with it because, you know, young men are going to respond to what they see around them. And I'm not just talking about Bonnie Blue, as I say, because this is really extreme. But I wish to God Channel 4 hadn't done this big, you know, story about it. But if they had, I hope they're going to follow it up by as much media coverage on incredible women, who women can also look at and think, wow, I could do that. That could be me. But it is the fact that in this environment we're in, where you've got violence against women as an epidemic, you've got young women having so much pressure, and young men, with the amount of real nasty stuff that there is.
And the sense that the boundaries get blurred the more mainstream media addresses these people and addresses these activities. I think the lionesses fall into the category you describe as young women that we can all celebrate and
absolutely
and champion.
And thank goodness for them.
Yes, no, I know. And yet, I think you're brilliant on the question of empowerment. It speaks to something deeper societally, doesn't it? And it speaks to I don't know whether it's a form of misogyny, but it appeals to something ugly in people, elements of this story. And what you've reminded me of is that those ugly things were in retreat in our society.
Yeah, and they absolutely were. Yeah. And I see it coming back. And I really feel for young women, it must be so confusing to see this kind of messaging. And I've spoken to young women. I'll give you a story. I was recruiting somebody for my business, and I work in quite a male environment, and I was really keen to get more females in. And I interviewed this woman, this young woman, who was absolutely fantastic. I would have loved to have hired her, but we're public facing, and she would have been, and we were in a retail environment and working with a lot of men, and not all of them were respectful. Most were absolutely fantastic, but every now and again there were issues. And a large part of what we did with our business was social media, and we involved the whole team in that. And so she would have been visible. Now, when I was going to interview her, I had a look at her social media profile because, you know, that's what everybody does when they look to recruit. And I saw lots and lots of photographs of her in her underwear, very sexual.
Right.
And I didn't hire her. I didn't even interview her because I was genuinely worried. I really wanted to, but I thought,
that's really interesting.
If she's going to go online, then there are going to be men coming in to the shop and meeting her, and I'm going to be showing her online, and she's going to be out there on the front line in person. And I don't doubt for a minute she would have been absolutely brilliant and really professional.
I wanted to get to that because that is really interesting, isn't it? And that it speaks of consequences which are not going to apply to this young woman, Bonnie Blue, but which other women, influenced perhaps by her behaviour, won't realise the consequences that their behaviours online might have IRL or offline in real life. Rachel, thank you. It's 12:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Network Rail says winds reaching 90 miles per hour from Storm Floris are disrupting train services across Scotland. An amber weather alert warning of a danger to life is in force across much of Scotland until 11 o'clock tonight. Rail passengers have been told not to travel north of Preston or Newcastle. Danny Chalmers is from Transport Scotland.
We would encourage people, especially families, to check the latest at Traffic Scotland, Police Scotland. Think about if their journey is absolutely essential in the eye of the storm. Maybe delay their journey if they absolutely can. And please check with your operator, because ferries and rail could be disrupted and are likely to be disrupted throughout the day.
A yellow warning is in place across a wider area of Northern England, North Wales and Northern Ireland. Five Metropolitan Police officers have been charged with inflicting grievous bodily harm. It follows an investigation by the Independent Office for Police Conduct into the restraint of a man in a hospital in London in 2023. He was placed into a medically induced coma and discharged 6 weeks later. A 33-year-old man's been jailed for 15 years for the manslaughter of his grandfather. John Brown, who was 81, died 6 days after suffering head injuries at his home in Warwickshire in November last year. LBC's George Ike has more details.
The judge told Jacob Walpole he exploited his grandparents to fund his lifestyle, adding your visits weren't out of compassion, there were demands to get money from them, including the night of the attack. Walpole was sentenced to 15 years in custody with 2 more years under licence conditions when he's released.
Leicestershire's Police and Crime Commissioner has defected from the Conservatives to Reform. Rupert Matthews, who's held the position since 2021, was previously the Tory MEP for the East Midlands. England's Test series with India has ended in a 2-2 draw. The visitors have just beaten England by 6 runs on the final day of the 5th Test at the Oval. They needed 35 runs to win on the final day, but lost 4 wickets in the first hour. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 1993. That's up 25. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, very strong winds and heavy rain from Storm Floris, turning drier with sunny spells later on. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 12. Scenes at the cricket, quite extraordinary, with one England player going in with a dislocated shoulder and trying in a sling just to see the side over the line, but ultimately falling just 6 runs short. Chris Wokes, the player concerned. So welcome back, everybody who was tempted away from this programme to watch that extraordinary sporting moment. We're going to talk next about... I used to talk about this all the time. I used to be absolutely, I don't know quite what the word is. And the reason why I was so, I don't know quite what the word is because I had a phobia. And a phobia is a thing of curious fascination, isn't it? The thing that you're phobic about is sometimes a thing that you can't help. It's like an itch that you can't help but scratch. I realized the extent of my phobia once when I was walking up the high street and it was quiet for some reason. So it must have been after the shops had shut. And a leaf in a doorway moved and I jumped out of my skin because I thought it was a rat. And I had such a deep and abiding fear of rats, hatred of rats, that I sort of thought to myself, you're going to have to do something about this. You can't go through life being frightened of rats. It's pathetic. I know where it comes from, but again, we had a bit of a trigger warning in the last hour, given that we were talking about pornography. I should probably give you a trigger warning now, because I'm about to describe the moment my phobia of rats developed. It's a pretty gross story. But ever since then, I've been fascinated by two things, really. Oh, Pat's back, he says. What are we chatting about? Rats, Pat. It's all about the rats. Build up too much tension. They've found a rat in Yorkshire that is 22 inches long from nose to tail. Just think about that. 22 inches long. That's about 55 centimetres. That's two rulers, give or take. Remember at school, the twangy ones? Or the wooden ones, depending on your age. That's two of those, give or take 2 inches. That's like, it's about that, is it? If you're watching later on YouTube, is it about that? That's more than that. So that's about 30 centimetres, right? So you're going up to 55, so that's 12 inches. Is that still in shot? About that? A bit smaller? It's absolutely chilling. Absolutely chilling. And what's interesting about this story is that it is being cited as evidence of much deeper, broader problems. And that is what I am interested in. The question of why it is now considerably, measurably, obviously harder to get rid of a rat infestation than it was, for example, 20 years ago. So you get your call up early on that, 03456060973. The Tories in the relevant area, it's Redcar and Cleveland, are blaming Labour because Labour have cut the council-provided pest control, almost certainly as a consequence of austerity measures that were brought in by Conservative central government. But the problem is being attributed to the failure of pest controllers to get an actual handle on the problem. And that is the area that I'm going to be most interested in, is how hard is it these days to get the help that you need, and how big is the problem? How widespread is the problem? And I guess people qualified to comment on this in the industry can tell me why. I mean, there's a photograph in the Daily Telegraph. It looks like a cat or a dog. I mean, it's in a plastic bag. Why are they getting so big? Why are we finding the biggest rats that we have ever found? Is it down to failure to exterminate? That's the question that I'm going to be asking. Kenny's picked up on something that is part of the reason why I used to have a phobia. And I was in Foyles at the weekend. I was in the bookshop on Charing Cross Road on Friday. And I noticed in the horror section that he is still incredibly popular. Anybody who ever read James Herbert's work in this field could have been forgiven for coming away with a lifelong phobia of rats. He wrote stories about, I think at one point they were sort of nuclear mutants, but he wrote stories, three books. I wonder if I can remember the name of all of them. The first one was called Rats. That's quite easy to remember. The second one, I think, was called Lair. And the third one was called Domain. And I'm almost a little bit shaky saying those words out loud 40 years later. That the horror that James Herbert conjured up in those books stays with you like all the best horror writing or horror filmmaking does for the rest of your life. Lucy points out that's two size 13 Converse baseball boots next to each other, the size of this latest rat. So that's phobia number one. Phobia number two came from a rat when I was a kid that I had to clear up. So we grew up in a farmhouse, on a farm. We didn't obviously farm the land. And quite often the cats would bring back a rat, but this one had gone unnoticed for a while. So when I went out with a shovel to flip it over, it was being eaten alive by maggots, and that just shocked me. I think I didn't quite vomit, but I was so. Then I spent subsequent years absolutely horrified by rats until we got an infestation in our home, and not the house we're in now, and called out someone to fix it. And that was one of the most. What's the word I want? I don't know that I've ever felt more admiring of another man. I mean, even Trevor Francis in his pomp at Nottingham Forest, or Roger Federer or Andy Murray, the people I look up to, I never felt as much admiration for another man as I did for the bloke who came round to our house to deal with the rat infestation. And he was telling me, Ricky, lovely bloke, ended up with his own TV show, actually. And he was telling me about the time that he took the dogs in, because he was one of the only terriers left in London. They take the terriers in to deal with a rat infestation. And it was extraordinary to hear someone speak with such sort of a matter-of-factness about something that turned me into a big girl's blouse. So I was literally, and he's just, no, we'll do this and we'll do that and then we'll do that. And if that happens, well, and I said, he told me a story once about the dog had broken the neck of a rat, and the rat was hiding under the backboard in the kitchen. And I said, well, so what did you do? And he says, well, I dragged it out and punched it to death. And I thought, you are such a man. You are more of a man than I will ever be. And that would only have happened in the context of this particular phobia. So, 11 minutes after 12 is the time. How bad is the problem? Can we actually measure whether or not the problem is getting worse? In Birmingham, they've introduced a rat tax. This is for locals if they call out council pest controllers as a consequence of the months-long bin strike that has been unfolding there. Glasgow has been hit. In 2023, people reported rats the size of small dogs, turning the street, one street in the city, into a no-go zone for refuse workers. The biggest rat on record was previously caught in Bournemouth in 2018. It was 21 inches from snout to tail. And the one that they've caught in Normanby in North Yorkshire is even bigger and believed to have been nesting in the property at the time. So the question of what it's like to have them in your house is an easy one to answer. 0345 60 973. The bit about why things are getting so much worse is what's of particular interest to me today. 0345 60 60 973. And crucially, why are they getting bigger? Why are they getting bigger? Why are the largest ones in history the ones that are being found and being identified now? 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. But underpinning all of those questions is this one. Why is it so much harder to get rid of them than it was, what are we talking about, 15 years ago when I had to? There's plenty of people out there. You see the vans. There's plenty of professionals. There's plenty of operatives. There's loads of people out there earning a decent crust doing this. But the sense in this story and other stories is that it is now considerably harder to get a handle on this kind of problem than it was when I needed to 15 years ago, or when councils would routinely deal with these sort of problems on a regular basis. So how big an impact has the cancellation of council-run programmes had? How big a problem is the infestation becoming? Are the infestations becoming? Are they? I mean, there's another one here. A bloke told the Telegraph earlier this year in Birmingham that he'd seen a rat so big a cat ran away in terror. So I don't know. Are they actually getting bigger? As I went outside in the garden, I literally saw a rat charging towards a cat, 48-year-old administration worker said. This was a big cat, but as soon as the cat saw the rat, it ran away. So it's a measure, really, of whether or not things are getting measurably worse, both in terms of infestation and in terms of animal size. And because it's 12:15 and we're well into the first week of August now, where Parliament isn't sitting and the domestic news agenda becomes notoriously fickle, I'll also invite you to try and scare the rest of us with your story of either of those phenomena, either the size of the thing that you're finding or the scale of the infestation. And I've got a rather good missed information for you later in the programme, which looks at that VAT introduction on school fees from a perspective that you will find, I hope, at least as amusing as I am. It could, as Graham points out, of course, be the case that cats are getting softer. It's not that rats are getting bigger. It's just that cats are getting softer.
This is LBC.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every journey. National Highways.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Why we are so phobic. I wonder why the rat is more likely to excite the sort of reactions that I've described than other animals or other problems. What are the most popular phobias? I wonder what are the things that feature most frequently. We've done phone-ins about funny phobias before. I was struck by the number of people who are terrified of clowns and buttons. You aware of that? Buttons feature quite heavily in phobia-related conversations, and so do clowns. But that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about what should be a fairly hefty social problem. Various councils reporting huge increases in problems with rats. Various residents in reporting huge increases, not just in infestations, but also in size of creature. And I'm interested in both of these things. William in Court points out that the acknowledged yardstick of rat size is as big as cats, and wonders whether any of these rats were as big as cats, and to which the answer is 22 inches from nose to tail is a fair size cat, mate. So, yes, and we found one in Birmingham that actually scared a cat away. As soon as the cat saw the rat, reports an eyewitness, it ran away. You see, I'm not making this up. So, why is it so much harder to get rid of them than ever before? John's in Tower Hamlets. John, what can you tell us?
Well, one of the reasons you're having as well, James, is there's been a legislation change in rodenticide use in external setting.
Oh.
So, on the 4th of July 2024, we work under a thing called a stewardship scheme, which is like a self-regulatory thing,
yeah,
on pest control side, and it's done to reduce the residues in birds of prey and owls. I know it sounds a bit mad, but bear with me.
All right.
So on the fourth of July, legislation changed, and then you can no longer
last year,
2024.
Yeah.
You can no longer use certain rodenticides in the external setting. So, like any open space baiting, public areas or anything like that, you can no longer
that.
Use rodenticides.
I missed that completely. I do this for a living. Well, the worry was that birds of prey might be eating it.
Yeah, it's to do with rodenticide residues in owls. There's an 85% population of owls that have got rodenticide put in them. Countryside stuff, but also we get birds of prey in the city centres as well.
So they'd eat the poison that had been put out for the rat and not die. But when the post-mortems were conducted, they'd find a level of rodenticide that was considered Well, every day's a school day, isn't it, John?
Yes. So if you were to look up the Campaign for Reasonable Rodenticide Use, which is what we use...
It sounds like something out of Monty Python, mate. If you're yanking my chain, there's going to be trouble.
No, James, mate, 100%. I've spoken to you many times about fox problems way back...
Yes, you have. That's going back a while, though.
Yeah,
Campaign
a long time
for
ago.
Reasonable Rodenticide
Use. Rodenticide Use.
Yes.
We call it CRU.
It's CRRU, CRU. Okay,
yeah,
it's CRRU, real. Yes.
So, it's 100% real. And so you have to adhere to that. So there's certain rodenticides you can no longer use externally. You used to be able to use, like, bromodiolone, diphenicum. You can't...
Oh, I think he got him. I think he's been exterminated. I might get John back on as well. I did not know that. And it wouldn't be enough. Well, I'll ask him, actually, later, whether or not it would be enough in the space of an hour for that to have had an impact. But on the bigger questions of why, I think John is back. So we're not claiming that legislation last July has kicked in so much that we're now getting more and bigger rats than ever before, or are we?
No. But it hasn't helped, because the longevity of a rat treatment now, instead of it being sort of a couple of weeks, it's extended. Now, you might be coming back with falls maybe for 6 weeks until you get...
Because the poison's not as good.
Well, no, it's as good, but the problem is the palatability, because there's only a couple of formulations that you can use. One of them you can't burrow bait with, and the other one you can burrow bait with, but the one that you can burrow bait with, the rats will consume it readily for maybe 3, maybe 4 days, and then they go off of it, and then they just drag it out of the burrow and distribute it above ground. And then the problem with that is it's quite toxic to dogs.
Got it. So you're not killing the rat?
No, you've got to be careful with secondary poisoning with cholecalciferol as well.
I'll tell you what, you need some qualifications to do this, don't you? It sounds like you've got all of them.
You have to be a level 2 in pest control, which is the Royal Society for Prevention of Health, Public Health. level two in pest control. So, there are level threes.
And I'm so happy to have you here. I could listen to you all day, actually. There's something about people who really know what they're talking about. It doesn't matter what the subject is. If someone really, really knows what they're... Like the opposite of me, John. If someone really, really knows what they're talking about, they're absolutely...
James, I could talk your ear off about pest control.
Well, I haven't finished yet, because I want you to take a step back and tell me, A, whether things are worse than you can remember at the moment, and B, whether or not they are really getting bigger, or it's August and newspaper journalists like nothing more than a story about giant rats when Parliament isn't sitting.
It is getting a little bit worse. Right. It is slightly worse. But that's predominantly where I'm working at the moment is in Tower Hamlets. So there's a lot of building work going on, which causes drain breaches, which is then... Because, I mean, believe it or not, a rat does not like being wet.
No, they
hate being wet. So the minute there's a breach in the drain, which can be like a fracture or a crack or a hole that forms in a pipe, they're up. They want to be out. They want to be up here. But then the bit with the large part of the rats, they're not really massive big. Just where they're now consuming high calorific food, like your McDonald's or other things are available, obviously.
It's the
calorific intake, they are getting heavier.
Good Lord.
And they're getting fat.
And longer as well. I mean, it comes with... What's the biggest you've seen?
I'd say about 20, maybe 22 inches from nose to tail.
God, I see now I'm going like that. I'm doing a thing with my teeth.
I mean, the base of their tail that comes from their body.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good, maybe circumference, maybe what, 8 centimetres round in circumference. Jeez. I mean, that's a big old
lump. It's like a finger.
Yeah.
A middle finger.
Fat.
I'm not doing that for the YouTube tape. That's that fat. Yeah. I mean, it is horrible, isn't it? You love your work, don't you?
Mate, I do this. I eat sleeping. I love it. Absolutely love it. And the thing is with it as well, I've got quite an admiration for rats as well, because they are massive survivors.
And they're really clever as well, aren't they?
And
that's
they're
the
very
thing.
They're very ingenious. I've got video evidence of them, because we use camera traps as well now to see, you know, if you've got a loft infestation. We put cameras up there to see what's happening and how they're getting in and where they're going to. And we've seen them pick up objects and drop them on traps to set the trap off so they can eat the bait off.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Final question. Would lockdown have played a part, do you reckon? Because they kind of had the run of the place during lockdown, didn't they?
Yeah, well, yes. But they also there was a minimisation of activity as well, because the amount of
detritus
on the streets wasn't there.
So they were safer than they'd ever been, but also hungrier.
Yes. So they come back like a bit more heftier after that. But you'll find any infestation, if you've got like a source of food, an alternative source of food, and it's near a drain breach or there's some sort of a problem in it, like construction-wise, they're out, they're up, and that's where they're feeding, because they love that goop in the bin.
And why do you think historically... So here's an interesting one from Sally. I hope she's still listening, but she might not be. I never thought I'd find myself considering turning you off, James, but I'm struggling to hang in there. I really want to hear the missed information, but I didn't realise how terrified I am of rats. I've got pet ferrets, which I cuddle, so what is going on? Why do you think... What is it about rats that gets us so much?
I think it's their association with filth and dirt, but if you pick one up, they are so soft.
It's never going to happen.
They're so soft. Well, I tell you, you come out with me one day.
I can't.
Make your ear curl.
If I had any.
Proper. But literally, because they spend 75% of their time grooming.
Do they? Like Keith?
Yes. That's why they're very, very soft. And also, remember, a new 10-pence piece size hull is how a full-size grown rat...
That's all it needs.
Road.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember. You, sir, are a living legend. Yeah, thank you, John.
Cheers, mate.
Mind
Appreciate
how you go,
that.
Yeah? All right, someone's suggesting he deserves a rattly otter. It is 26 minutes after 12. Why? So fascinating. And it's not just me. I can tell you, my inbox is buzzing. I can't give him a rattly otter because there's lots of people out there who do the same job, although possibly not with the same levels of enthusiasm. Jonathan's in Brixton. Jonathan, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello there, sir. First time caller, long time listener.
Welcome.
So I'll keep it brief. So I'm a building surveyor. I've been in the job for about 20 odd years now. Worked for quite a few local authorities up and down the country around London. And this one particular organisation asked me to go out and do a post inspection on their property in Clapham. Went round there, and there was this smell of gas. So I asked my colleague, I said, have the gas team been around here? And he said, no, there hasn't been any reports of any gas leaks or anything. I said, all right, let's go and check and see. All right, we'll check around the building. Anyway, followed the odour, opened the door to the basement, and it was submerged with water. For some reason, there was a leak in there.
Right.
And then we had a look, looking closer, and I saw something floating.
No.
And it was a rat.
Yeah.
And it was the rat that was giving off the smell.
A dead
of
rat.
Gas. Yeah. And I freaked out and I laughed at the same time because I never realised.
You're a building surveyor. You must have come across rats before.
Not a dead one. Not like that. It smells like gas. Honest to God, if you used to go out and smell, like speak to a gas engineer,
it'd be exactly the same smell, giving off
exactly the same smell.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was awful. It was like I've never seen it before in my life.
Is that it? Is that the story?
Basically, yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
That's the flipping punchline.
Yeah.
You found a dead rat floating in a basement. Mate, I've got one in Yorkshire that's 22 inches long and alive. you just got a drowned rat in a basement in Clapham. It's extraordinary. 28, no, thank you, mate. A brilliant debut. Goodness knows what your second call to the show is going to be about. Why is it getting so much worse? And how, I tell you what is interesting. What do you do? I think this a lot, and you're going to laugh at me for thinking it. But if you've got a problem that you can throw a bit of money at, whether it's big or small, I often find myself wondering, it's just the way that I'm calibrated politically, what do you do if you haven't got the cash? So, you know, there'll be something big like a boiler, and not everyone could afford to get their boiler replaced, or you'd have to borrow some money, or whatever it was. But if you've got a rat infestation, the council won't come out, and you're on your uppers. You know, you're running out of money before you've run out of month. It's a condition that we've talked about a lot. How bad does it get? I mean, how hard can it be? It's a terrible thing, really, for a 21st century civilization to tell residents that unless you can afford it, getting rid of rats is not our problem. Unless, of course, you do it the other way around. And actually, things are much better than they used to be. And that's why councils can afford to take their foot off the gas. And the only reason we get spooked and freaked out by it is because we've got so used to it not being a problem. Anyone who's read Angela's Ashes by Frank McCourt will be aware of an episode in that which reminds us of a time, albeit in, that was in London, wasn't it? It was before they moved to, I think it was in, anyway, either way, in a major European city, either Dublin or London, I can't remember. No, it was New York. Well, whatever. Anyone who's read Angela's Ashes by Frank McCourt can probably remember its contents rather better than I'm managing to, but it is a reminder of a time when rats were not just a sort of occupational hazard of being alive, but a constant companion of humanity. Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
Train services are being disrupted in Scotland by winds reaching 90 miles per hour from Storm Floris. An amber weather alert warning of a danger to life is enforced across much of the country until 11 o'clock tonight. Five Metropolitan Police officers have been charged with inflicting grievous bodily harm. It follows an investigation by the police watchdog into the restraint of a man in hospital in London in 2023. And millions of drivers could receive hundreds of pounds each as part of a motor finance compensation scheme. The Financial Conduct Authority is to consult on a claim system following Friday's ruling in the Supreme Court. LBC weather, Storm Floris bringing unseasonably strong and damaging winds this afternoon, turning drier from the west later with sunny spells and rain becoming confined to the far north and southeast, a high of 24 degrees.
Over-tourism can have a large impact, affecting local environments and economies. That's why LBC is investigating tourism and how travel can be done better thanks to Intrepid Travel. This Wednesday, Sheila Fogarty will be joined by the UK General Manager at Intrepid Travel, Joanna Reeve, to discuss how mass tourism is affecting countries. That's this Wednesday, thanks to Intrepid Travel. I'm James O'Brien, and it's 12:31.
LBC.
B&Q Club and TradePoint members get 15% off when you spend £75 or more. Join today. Ends Tuesday. You can do it. Exclusions apply. See DIY.com or TradePoint.co.uk.
It's a chilled summer's day. The twins are splashing in the paddling pool while Mrs. Thing puts her feet up. She's proper chuffed, having saved money on a British Gas boiler service. It's like an MOT for your boiler. Just £79, reduced from £109. Bliss. Well, it was nice while it lasted. British Gas. Taking care of things. Visit britishgas.co.uk to learn more and see full T's and C's. Sale ends 9th of September 2025. Offer available to new boiler service contract customers.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name. Experts in money. A hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount. Promised a great return. Took all I had. And then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated. And every month, CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money. So head to celsolicitors.co.uk today. CEL.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 12:33. It's a big concern. If you're just tuning in, can you guess what we're talking about? It's a big concern. The longer this is ignored, the worse it will get. The issue is a growing problem. Councillor Taylor has now urged the Labour-run council to take urgent action to tackle the problem and called for a full study to be carried out across the borough, as well as joint action involving businesses, landlords and social housing providers. The longer this is ignored, the worse it will get, he said. What's he talking about? If you're just tuning in, can you guess? I'll give you a clue. It's based in Normanby. The story starts in Normanby in North Yorkshire, because it is there that a rat... Well, I mean, having spoken to John in Tower Hamlets, it doesn't sound that extraordinary. They just didn't go to the bother of getting in touch with the sort of archivists or the media. But 22 inches from nose to tail. And the bit of the tail, the bit where the tail joins the torso, he said about 8 inches was that diameter or circumference? Diameter, I think. So that is, man, that's like a finger. That's hideous. So we're talking about that and all the obvious phone-in connotations of giant rats as big as a dog caught in a home in Yorkshire. But why do we have such a weird relationship with rats? Because I'm getting the messages you'd expect from people telling me that they love rats and they've got pet rats and they're the sweetest, cleverest, most lovely animals you could imagine. So why do we have such a weird... Why are so many of us so frightened of something, even in Sally's case, when they keep ferrets... As pets, I honestly don't know. I've got Brian up next, but I've got another Brian here on the. I've got Brian. So here it goes. We're going Brian, Bruce. All right, that's the order of contributors. Two on the phone, one on the text. This one's on the text. Morning, James. I'm 78 years old. My dad was brought up in a poor home in Deptford. He used to tell me that he would kill rats with a wooden club. I never really took much notice. So when, as a gardener, I got married and we moved to Hampshire. On the estate, the owner raised pheasants for shoots, and their food was stored in a large barn, which, as you can imagine, was a thriving rat habitat. We'd use all sorts to kill them. One Easter, my mum and dad came to stay. We had two sons by them, aged 9 and 10. I told Dad about the infestation. I'd never seen him so enthusiastic. He couldn't wait to show his grandsons how he dealt with them. We found him an old wooden spade handle. He took the boys to round the back where you could see a rat run and waited. Pretty soon, there was a pile of around 25 dead rats in the space of a couple of hours. He's passed away now. And sadly, writes Brian, so has one of our sons. But I can tell you, they loved him to bits beforehand, and that's such a happy memory. They used to talk about the rat massacre for years afterwards. Well, you can see why. And it's, and I'm very sorry for both your losses, Brian, but it speaks directly to what I'm talking about. This weird relationship that we have with them, and the possibility that things used to be much worse than they are now. And that's why, perhaps, we're more relaxed than we should be about the scale of infestation. How hard is it to get rid of them if you can't afford to pay someone? Brian's in Brentwood. Brian, what would you like to say?
I think sometimes you might be better off with a community response. I'm taking inspiration from the island of Tristan da Cunha in the middle of the South Atlantic, which is a British overseas territory. And every year, the entire community turns out for Ratting Day. And they divide the population up into teams. Everyone goes out, spends the whole day digging rats out of holes, putting dogs down after rats. And then there's a party at the end of the day. There's prizes for the longest tail, prizes for the biggest rat.
Have you ever attended?
No. I mean, it's an island that I've long wanted to visit, but it's very difficult to get to. But the public pages, tristandacuna.com,
yes,
will give you plenty of images of how to organise a rat hunt. And
so you're suggesting that we should do one in Birmingham, or indeed in Normanby, in North Yorkshire?
A community rat hunt, if it's coordinated properly, do it all at once.
Yeah, and I'm looking at some of the pictures now, Brian, and I'm not going to lie, I'm not going to thank you for that little reference there. The bit where they measure the tails, I didn't realise that the tails were no longer attached to the rats when they do the tail. Oh, no, there goes my breakfast. Honestly, what are you doing? Brian, what are you doing? Man, you could have warned us. Measuring them. Oh, dear. Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, and it would have been. That's why I'm mentioning the Frank McCourt book. It would have been a community exercise once. Thank you, Brian. I hope you get to visit Tristan da Cunha one day. Bruce is in Leeds. Bruce, what would you like to say?
Hello. Hi there, James.
Hello,
first Bruce. Time well, first time
your,
calling in.
You've picked your moment, Bruce. What would you like to say?
I'll just warn you, I come at this from the point of view of being a rat lover who has kept rats over the years.
What's the appeal? You know, what's the attraction?
I don't know. They're just absolutely fascinating creatures. Mm. When you sort of, you can sit with them, and they will literally come and sit on your lap.
Mark,
more than a cat or anything would.
My favourite, one of my favourite crime writers, Mark Billingham, he's got a book out at the moment, but he's got two series up and running. It's a Tom Thorne book that's out at the moment, but his new detective, he has pet rats, and he writes about them in a really lovely way, actually, and it makes exactly as you just described it. They are very loving and affectionate animals, apparently.
Oh, they absolutely are, yeah. Of course, a sort of like a house rat, a lab rat, rescued lab rats, a completely different sort of like thing to street rats, which have generally very, very short lifespans anyway. And they breed prolifically as well because of, you know, the difficulty of living outside in the wild. But one of the things that I would say is that it's sort of human behaviour, really. And I'm talking about individual humans as well as, like, large business and small business human behaviour as well, is the thing that really attracts it. And over the last couple of years, I mean, I had one rat that got its head stuck in an incinerator bin in my garden. And there was
this was a wild rat. This wasn't a pet.
This is a wild rat, yeah, because they're out of control around here.
Oh, are they? So it's happening quite a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's nothing new either, especially, I would say, since round about pandemic time was the point at which it really started escalating. And I think it's because of the amount of filth on the streets, basically, that people leave behind. And the thing that's so galling about it all, really, is the fact that, so, like, when this rat got its head stuck in my incinerator bin, there was no way I could get it out. It was panicking in there with its head stuck in one of the little holes at the bottom of the bin.
Was it stuck on the way in or on the way out?
It had got into the bin because the lid was off the bin, and then it had tried to get out the holes in the bottom, but its body was too wide and it couldn't fit through the holes, so its head was stuck. And there was no way I couldn't put my hands near it because it was terrified. And it was, you know,
could you not have just given the bit? Was it a big incinerator, but you couldn't pick it up, turn it upside down, and give it a shake?
I did that.
Right.
As I did that, I could see that its neck was swelling up around it. And so, you know, and I was, I kind of like left it for, I poured like olive oil around it.
Oh,
aren't
you sweet?
Sort of like,
well, hang on, was that
out
to get it out or to cook it?
To try and let it slide out with the weight of its body upside down.
Good Lord, didn't work.
But it didn't work, and it was there for an hour, and I could see it was really struggling. I didn't want to have to do it, because I thought, you know, I love rats.
Do we need a trigger warning here? Do I have to warn people of a delicate disposition that we may be about to share something?
Yeah, okay. There's a sort of like a human-involved, you know,
right,
death involved here.
So euthanasia, rat euthanasia.
Basically, yeah. Okay. So I had to use a shovel on the outside of the bin.
You did say that with a bit of relish.
Well, I was kind of pleased that I discovered that I can actually put an animal down when it needs to be put down.
That's an important
skill. Which I did wonder whether I...
Come the revolution. Come the revolution, we'll need more people like you. And do you still keep them as pets now?
I don't have any now, no. I would like it. I quite like the idea of having rats again, but I just don't have time for it now to keep them.
Well, you'll enjoy Mark's books. It's the Declan Miller series. The most recent one is called The Wrong Hands, and it features, the rats have quite a big cameo in there.
All right, okay.
I think you'll enjoy it if you like a bit of detective fiction. I'd very much recommend that. We're not getting any closer, so we think lockdown had something to do with it, junk food, but I don't think junk food is more prevalent now than it was 20 or 30 years ago. The big thing is going to be the council's not doing it. And the question of why is easily answered. That will be austerity. But the question of what happens if you can't call the council and you haven't got much... You don't want to tell me, do you? I should have realised that. You're not going to ring. I say, I've got a rat problem. I can't afford to fix it. Because of the embarrassment attached to it all. But if you're minded to... I'd love to hear, because it's one of those little things that you think about. If you're lucky enough to be able to throw a few quid at a problem, you do occasionally find yourself thinking, what would you do if you didn't have a few quid? And the answer is, you'd need to call Brian's late dad, wouldn't you? Back from heaven, with his spade handle or his wooden baton. Will's in Camberwell. Will, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. It was about 10 years ago, and I was facing homelessness from the first room I was renting after moving to London. Mm. And a geezer in my running club, he said, oh, you can rent a spare room in my flat in Bermondsey if you want.
That's nice.
And I was like, yeah, brilliant. Really nice, actually. Nice bit of town. And I went round there and getting on, and he said, oh, well, you can empty the bins if you like. It took the stuff down to the bin room, and it was the messiest bin room I'd ever seen. And there was on the floor newspapers, cereal bins, boxes and stuff. And you could, as you walk into this silent bin room, you could just see, is that paper moving? What's happening
there?
That's
the thing about, yeah.
And then you realise, OMG, there's something here.
Loads of them.
Loads. Absolutely loads.
And what did your mate say when you told your mate?
Well, I went up there and he was sort of looking at me and saying, like, how was the bin room?
Yeah.
It was fine. Well, did you go down there, Matt? She's like, no, never. Because he's the one with the phobia, you see. I'm not actually that bothered.
But I'm thinking,
I need to keep this guy sweet so that I can keep renting his room, you see.
Yes.
He didn't have loads of cash at the time, nor did I. Not going to do the council and do it proper, but I love a bit of DIY, you see.
So I
popped down to B&Q in Peckham. You get a couple of rat traps from memory. It was about 12 quid. They're pretty chunky. They're pretty big. And stuck some, I'm not really a cheese eater, but I stuck some like level one out of five cheddar in there. Just left it for a few days, came back. Absolutely nothing in there.
No, I wouldn't have done. They'll eat the cheese and somehow escape unscathed. They're clever, these creatures.
Exactly that.
I'm going to be late for the break, so I'm going to have to push you to the bit where it worked. Because I presume it did, otherwise you wouldn't have rung me.
It did eventually, because you've got to, if they can smell that a human's been near it, you see. So I left it there, made it all dirty, washed my hands, did all that, so it's part of the furniture. I concocted a delicacy for rats, made out of the strongest cheddar I could find, or even posher cheese, with peanut butter. And then on the last day I went in there, I could just see a tail sticking out. And
how many did you catch?
Full extension. Two in the end.
That's
and
pathetic.
After that, I moved out and left him to it.
Oh,
so
fair
good luck
enough
to him.
Yeah. I mean, well done. I don't know that many people would have been... That's the point, isn't it? Like, you've got one flatmate who's absolutely terrified of them and another one who actually relishes finishing them off. The mystery of why the problem and indeed the creatures seem to be growing remains unsolved. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Protests, peaceful and otherwise, happened across the UK this weekend over asylum hotels. What do you want the government to do?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend.
That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is, actually, I know you haven't asked. And I have to be honest, I haven't been asked. But I don't think I could ever go on I'm a Celebrity because of the possibility of the rat-based challenge. I think I've got a winner in terms of encounters that people have had, but I shall share that with you shortly. Now, last week, you may have heard me waxing lyrical about a Substack that I like to read. I'm getting more and more into Substacks because I find that the obsessions of mainstream or traditional media are becoming ever more narrow and ever more hysterical. I've also lost the ability to use Twitter as a source or inspiration for finding things that I'm going to be interested to read. And I will, I think, probably start getting into the habit of recommending Substacks to you. I recommended one last week called Comment is Freed, which is particularly nice because it's a father and son operation. The father being Lawrence Friedman, Emeritus Professor of War Studies at King's College London, who we have spoken to in the past, and the son being Sam Friedman, who I mentioned to you, had written a fascinating article. He did it again at the weekend on the question of radicalisation and people who once seemed relatively mainstream in UK politics and media going really, really far to the extreme. But that's not what I wanted to talk to him about. I just tell you that the Substack is called Comment is Freed and it's highly recommended. What I wanted to talk to him about was a classic contender for
missed information.
Thank you, Emily. Which is a feature where it turns out that a story, the more you dig into it, bears very little resemblance to the headline. And it was Sam Friedman on Blue Sky who spotted this one before I did earlier today. What's the headline, Sam? Can you remember?
It was about private schools, and I think it was saying 50 private schools.
More than 50.
More than 50 private schools have closed in the last year.
Since Labour put VAT on fees, the clear inference being that correlation is causation.
Absolutely, yes. But if you read much further down the article towards the end, you could see that, in fact, there were more private schools now open than there were last year because there were more opened than closed. And, in fact, the number that closed, about 50, is pretty much the number that closes every year. So it has pretty much nothing to do with VAT on private schools.
And, yeah, only, even by the standards of misinformation, that headline is an absolute doozy because if you were not reading down to paragraphs 264, you would come away thinking, oh, they were wrong. It did actually cause schools to shut down.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Times has been running this kind of campaign, and the Telegraph have been running this campaign for 2 years now, absolutely sort of hysterically drumming away at the idea that that would cause huge numbers of children to leave the private sector, cause all these schools closures. And it just hasn't. We've seen a drop of less than 2% in the number of children in private schools, as we just said. No more closures than usual,
you've been keeping an eye on the reality as the is it propaganda? That seems like quite a strong word. As the misinformation has been making its way around the world, you've been keeping quite a close eye on what was actually happening.
Yeah, it's an issue close to my heart because I've worked in education policy for a lot of my career, and I could just see that this was nonsense from the start, that the vast majority of parents who use private schools could afford to pay that. That was clear. It's a very, what's called by economists, a very inelastic good. People will pay for it even as the price goes up. We've seen big, big price increases over the last 20, 30 years, well above inflation. That had nothing to do with that, and parents have kept paying. So I never thought it was very likely that we'd see big closures, and then we haven't. But the newspapers still seem to be unprepared to admit it.
Insisting, and on the individual cases, when you actually read into it, you may have a head teacher describing a school closure, referencing it as a factor, but it has never, to the best of my knowledge, been the only factor.
Anyway. Now, if you look at the schools that have closed, they were all in major financial difficulty before that was introduced. You know, there are a lot of schools that are often very small in uneconomic parts of the country, small prep schools, etc., that aren't particularly economic and have always closed, and that's what we're still seeing.
Thank you, Sam. While I have you, feel free to conjure up a little bit of business for your Substack, Comment is Freed, which, as I mentioned, you do with your father. Just in your own words, what does it seek to achieve?
Well, thank you very much for your kind words at the beginning. I mean, what we're trying to do is break away from that kind of clickbait crap that we get in the mainstream media increasingly, and to cover issues in real detail that aren't necessarily top of the headlines today, but really matter to the world. So we're trying to get away from the ephemera towards the big stories that really matter, with lots of detail and lots of information.
Fantastic. And you can find it on Substack under the title Comment is Freed, with a D. Sam Friedman, thank you very much indeed. And that is a classic, I think you'll agree, of the genre.
Missed information.
Thank you, Emily. We need to do more of those. They're among my favourites, actually, because the sheer cynicism involved in putting a headline that says more than 50 UK private schools shut since Labour put VAT on fees, while technically true, is clearly designed to feed into that incredibly ignorant section of the media that has been pretending since this policy was announced that it was going to actually cause school closures. And as Sam has explained, the sum total of private schools is higher. You could put that down to it. It'd be just as honest to say more private schools open than ever before since Labour put VAT on fees, or whatever choice of language, whatever order of words you prefer. 12:55, and I mean it about Substack. So I'm quite a late arrival at that particular party, but some of the most enjoyable stuff I've read. And David Aranovich has a brilliant one as well. And so does Hanif Qureshi, who of course I interviewed on Full Disclosure recently. And accident, he's sort of paraplegic now. He's paralyzed from the neck down, and he dictates it to his lovely son. And those are so brilliant. They veer from the absolutely ridiculous and hilarious right through to the deadly serious and insightful. Most recent one that Hanif posted involved his interactions with an AI sex bot, which I would really recommend. 12:55 is the time. Joanne is in South Shields to steer us back to rats. Joanne, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, thank you for the show, James, as well, because it's really important what you do. I've put quite a few people straight with your facts.
Thank you, Joanne. What a lovely thing to say.
No, it is. It's really important in this age. No, as we speak, James, there's a percussion section in my loft.
Oh, no.
I'm not afraid of rats, believe
it or
not.
Oh, that's good.
I'm a wildlife artist and a vegetarian and a member of a wildlife charity, so I can see all the benefits of them. However, when I moved into this council bungalow, because I was homeless and I'm disabled.
Right.
It was in a real state. Holes in the ceiling, holes outside. You couldn't get through the gate to the garden because an elderly gentleman had lived here. Oh, God. It's been biblical, the things I've had to deal with.
How do you know it's rats and not squirrels?
I know it's rats because a dead rat was caught by a man who, he works for the council as a contractor, just a one-off job.
Yeah.
I gave him no tools, very little supplies, and I said, oh, we have a rat problem. He said, I love doing that as a hobby. He was one of the spade guys.
Yes, no, but there's a lot of it about. We should be grateful. Yeah. So he just did it off the out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah.
And he came downstairs with one dead rat.
Yeah, but the problem is, James, the repairs are so bad, the council won't do them. I've been under them about six times. My carer, my sister, blasted them.
But they're not doing anything about it.
Nope, they go down the chimney breast, and I can hear them. Yeah, we have a hoarder next door, a private house.
And what do they say when you say, I need help? What reason do they give you for not helping?
They now don't answer me. They now will not come out because we did our own work. I mean, just 2 days ago, I was putting stuff through the hatch with a dog. You know, a thing you throw a dog ball with?
Yeah.
Rubber gloves, poison on there.
Trying to do it yourself? Oh, well, be careful, won't you?
I'm not going to do it, James. It's not the rat I'm afraid of, it's the spiders.
Well, that's a phone in for another day, Joanne. That's like another James Herbert novel. I want to squeeze in one more because I think we've got another professional on the line. John's in Waterlooville. John, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. It's a multifaceted issue.
I've only got a minute, so don't give me all the facets.
I'll go as quick as I can. So we had legislation changes in 2017 so the amateurs couldn't get control of the super duper stuff.
Right.
We've got council budgets that have been slashed.
That's got to be the biggest, hasn't it?
It's one off.
Yeah.
We've got food availability. Everyone wants to put bird feeders outside. We're building on fields all the time, so you've got house building. Drainage is a massive issue, and water companies don't maintain the drains.
Back to the water companies again. It's amazing how many roads lead to them, isn't it?
And that's it, yeah. So if you're on a detached or a semi-detached house and you've got a rat problem, if you're not seeing problems outside and all your holes and everything are sealed on the outside, then it's definitely a sewage issue. So there's a lot to
and,
it.
And what about, are they actually getting bigger or is that a little bit of tabloid overexcitement?
Yeah, so around Kent, it's really bad. It's really bad.
How big? There's What's the biggest you've seen?
Well, for me, because I'm in the south, it's not too much of an issue. But up there, you know, you're talking 12, 15 inches of these rats.
It's amateur, mate. That's amateur hour. I've got one that's 22 inches long in North Yorkshire.
Yeah, so, mate, I'll send you some photos over so you can have a little look yourself.
Ooh, I will. I absolutely will, because I can do it on a screen. It's kind of just about manageable, but I couldn't do it in real life. I certainly couldn't do what you do for a living. Oh, thank you, John. That's it from me for another day. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause live radio, rewind live radio, listen to a range of podcasts, including Full Disclosure. I just mentioned one with Hanif Qureshi. It's quite special, that. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4. But now, you may have heard some groaning in the background. It's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Well, we've been dealing with squirrels in our house.
They're really noisy and really, really disruptive. Well, they gnaw through everything.
Don't say that to me.
Sorry.
I think they've gone for now, but the tree company is coming to lop a few branches off. Yeah. Just stop. Oh, terrifying.
I had them in the loft.
At least they're cute.
Same bloke got rid of my squirrels that got rid of my rats.
Don't say rats.
And he later got rid of my foxes as well that were burrowing under the garden office. Happy days.
Ever had a bat flying around your living room?
No, not my living room.
I have.
Well, only in my belfry.
Terrifying. Anyway, that's that. That's that pest off. Over. Thanks, James. At 2 today, Bonnie Blue, you've heard of her. Her business, increasingly outlandish levels of pornography, even deviancy, depending on your take, has broken the bonds of paid-for content, and it's hit TV last week, in fact, Channel 4's 1,000 Men and Me documentary. Now Parliament, or a bit of it, is looking to restrict Bonnie Blue's content, should they? I'll have a report on Storm Floris, what you can expect depending on where you live. We'll talk about male contraception at 3. We've been around that block a few times, haven't we? So let's do it again. And we'll talk about these protests, peaceful and otherwise, that took place across the UK this weekend over asylum hotels. What do you want the government to do?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Britain Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. Train services are being disrupted in Scotland as a result of winds reaching 90 miles per hour caused by Storm Floris. Rail passengers have been told not to travel north of Preston or Newcastle. An amber weather alert, meaning there is a danger to life, is enforced across much of the country until 11 o'clock tonight. Climate scientist at the Royal Meteorological Society, Dr. Chloe Brimacombe, has told LBC why that's in place.
We are used to seeing storms in August, so that's not abnormal. But what's really of concern with this specific storm is the strength of the winds. So as you said, we're seeing that amber weather warning in the north of Scotland, but also the yellow weather warning across northern England. And this has now been extended to the very end of the day.
A yellow warning is in place across a wider area of Northern England, North Wales and Northern Ireland. Five Metropolitan Police officers have been charged with grievous bodily harm following an investigation by the watchdog. A man in his 50s was restrained by officers at a hospital in North London in April 2023. LBC's Benji Hyatt has more.
Police officers from the Metropolitan Police responded to reports of a man who was behaving erratically, setting fire to his clothes and threatening members of the public in central London. He was taken by officers to a nearby hospital, but there, according to the investigation by the Independent Office for Police Conduct, he became agitated as police tried to subdue him with pepper spray. He was given emergency first aid by medical staff and then placed in a medically induced coma and wasn't released from hospital until 6 weeks later.
The Police and Crime Commissioner for Leicestershire has defected from the Conservatives to Reform. Rupert Matthews, who has been in post since 2021, was also previously a Tory MP for the East Midlands. Downing Street says images showing Israeli hostages starving are completely abhorrent. Hamas has offered to let Red Cross to bring them more food, but only if a permanent aid corridor is opened up in Gaza. Health officials there say five Palestinians died of starvation yesterday. And England's Test cricket series with India has ended in a 2-2 draw, with the visitors winning the final match by 6 runs at the Oval. England needed 35 runs to win, but lost 4 wickets in an hour. In the City, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 34 points at 91.03. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, Storm Floris bringing unseasonably strong and damaging winds this afternoon, turning drier from the west later with sunny spells and rain becoming confined to the far north and southeast. A high of 24 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has been speaking over the weekend about plans for a new faster asylum process within weeks rather than the months and even years it sometimes takes to get asylum claims through. So that's all to the good if it comes about, as long as it's still a rigorous process, of course. I want to talk about these in the context of that. I want to talk about these protests that took place over the weekend, and just the simple fact that this concern about asylum hotels, both where they are, who might be in them, and the cost of them. Whatever you think about that situation, it's fair to say it's causing a great deal of political weather at the moment. And 15 people at the weekend were arrested after protests in different parts of the country, outside particular hotels used to house asylum seekers, took place. They were peaceful, many of these protests, but clearly if 15 people were arrested, there was some kind of difficulty going on. 9 people were arrested in London, 7 for breaching Public Order Act conditions, according to the Met. The Met has been at pains on social media, I've seen it over the weekend, to say they are not banning any protests. People have the right to protest as long as they do it peacefully and within the law. It's just the latest in a long string, isn't it, of protests outside migrant hotels. The Home Office has said the number of hotels being used for asylum seekers has decreased from more than 400 two summers ago, to less than 210. That still means people are being housed somewhere, and housing is itself a very thorny issue, isn't it? It also announced plans to end the use of hotels at all to house migrants by 2029, which Rachel Reeves has said will save the government $1 billion a year. Yvette Cooper, for her part, in an interview over the weekend, said she wants to restore order and control to the system by fast-tracking that process. As I mentioned a few moments ago, she said if we speed up the decision-making appeal system and also then keep increasing returns, we hope to be able to make a big reduction in the overall numbers. There's still the question of boats arriving full of people, the threat to those people, as in to themselves, to their safety when they get on those boats. And it was interesting, I was looking at, over the weekend on one particular format, I was looking at an interview with an Australian politician, or a former Australian politician, who had had some responsibility for similar problems in her own country. And they took a much firmer line than we do. It may be a line that appeals to you, I don't know. You'll be able to tell me. But they did turn people back. And if they had an asylum claim, and most of the people in the boats make an asylum claim, they were taken to a place called Nauru Island, off the Australian coast, significantly off the Australian coast. Now, that's not without its difficulties either, because there were very serious and verifiable reports of abuse in the detention centres in that island, of terrible mental distress amongst children who were there. They kept children there as well as adults. So it's far from a sort of silver bullet of a solution. But my question to you, on both the people coming across in boats and where we house them currently, forgive me, what do you want? Simple, really. Simple question, but a complex issue. What do you want the government to do that it isn't already doing? So it's telling you frequently what it's doing about the gangs and working mutually with other European countries, in particular France. It's telling you what it plans to do to speed up the asylum claims, which it has already done, and it has deported more failed claimants than we saw before, significantly more. So what else do you want the government to do? And you still hear frequently people like Robert Jenrick arguing that we should leave the European Court of Human Rights so that we can make absolutely independent decisions on this. And I wonder whether that is an argument that's going to get increasing purchase in this country if